Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Let's groove tonight. Well, singing going on, Joe.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get some clips here. I've got. Oh yeah.
Well, is that laughing at my "Let's groove tonight"?
No, that's laughing at the first. Let me see if I can get the first sound clip to play. It sound bite. It didn't play. Here it goes. It never went. Okay, you know what it was? It was the sound of scissors cutting.
I guess the you're referring to the controversial, and, at least to some people, controversial net cutting by the Hoosiers.
The laughing was the rest of the Big Ten and the rest of the Big Ten and Kentucky fans, and you know, and you know, I've actually got an inquiry from a Michigan fan. That if they win on Saturday, if they should maybe cut the nets down too. And I said, you know, hey, go for it. You didn't lose.
Hey, I know that we'll get into this throughout the show, and if people want to send in their thoughts or comments or tell us we're wrong or right or just give your view, you can call 773-897-6325, or you can text me, Coach K, at 812-480-9449, 9449-482, that's text only. Or you can message us on Facebook or Twitter, Coach K and Joe on Twitter.
Or
hey,
if you're part of the Purdue faction or Kentucky, or you don't want to text the IU guy, 812-630-2449.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to get on the show and get your thoughts heard. I know one thing, if you go to our website, CoachKandJoeShow.com, and you go down to the promo, you will hear the guys out of New York who say, Coach K speaks the truth.
I'm not sure what they say, but
I know they say Coach K speaks the truth. Joe, seriously, though, we had a response coming into the show, the comment, because they knew. The listener knew that we were going to end up talking about the net cutting fiasco or okay deal at IU, and they kind of knew how you felt. And this is from Chris, and Chris says, just a quick reminder before your show throws Crean under the bus. Now, listeners, I'm an IU guy. I'm not throwing Crean under the bus. Joe might be, but I'm not. We're just going to talk about whether it's appropriate, wrong, right. What are they thinking? Why would you cut the nets down for a Big Ten co-championship after a loss anyway? Why would you cut the nets down? A banner's good enough.
Okay,
and he
I'm
says, definitely. 2012, Michigan State, I know you'll love this, Joe, raised a Big Ten champion banner at their loss last year to Ohio State on senior night. Funny thing is, they were co-champions after that loss, but raised the banner anyway. Spartan fans call it Bannergate. Well, I got to tell you, if they're calling it Bannergate, well, then that's not supporting the IU situation at all. Also, that same evening, ladders were set up under the nets. Players declined to cut them down. Yo, yo, go, Michigan State, love that. Now you all love Izzo, but he won't be critiqued as bad as Crean is being critiqued. Now, I know you don't like Izzo. Just wanted to share before your Purdue buddy, goes on his little rant tomorrow. So Chris weighs in. Chris, we appreciate it. Chris lives up in the Washington Bar Eve area, and we appreciate your comments, Chris. Bannergate, I like that. But you know what? Bannergate. Even though Michigan State did that, and I love that the players wouldn't cut down the nets, I still go back to, why would you cut down the nets for a Big Ten Conference championship? You do that if you win the Big Ten Conference tourney. You do that
and
when
also you after you lose.
Play tourney. So weigh in on that, too. Joe.
Well, I don't think Chris listens real good, because if he did, he would realize that I'm more of an IU fan than I am a Michigan State fan. I despise Michigan State. And, you know, I laughed because there was a time in the past, I think it was around the 2007, 2008, something like that, where Michigan State raised the Big Ten championship banner before the Purdue game, final game of the year. Guess what? Purdue came back and beat them, and they were co-champions. So, you know, I guess they didn't learn their lesson from the first time either. But you know, I just, you know, I guess Coach Green can do whatever he wants. I just, my personal opinion is, after you lose, you might have set a record. It might have been the first basketball team to ever cut nets down after a loss. You know, I mean, I remember in 1984 when Tom Dienhart and I were intramural champions, and we had one game to go, and we decided, no, we're not going to cut down the nets. We're going to wait and celebrate the intramural championship after the final game. You know,
I'm sure Tom loves that. Hey,
you
Joe,
know.
on a more serious note, want to offer my condolences to the Clark family, Maggie Clark, who died in just a tragic accident during the week in a snow, got in an accident and lost her life. And Maggie, of course, was a maiden name, was Sheeter, and Ron Sheeter, and some of the Sheeters that we knew growing up. And also her husband, Dick, and her son, Scott. Scott played for me when I was coaching at Jasper. He actually had not been playing basketball, and I had him in class as a sophomore, and he was about 6'6", 6'7", at the time, and I didn't understand why he wasn't playing basketball. But coaxed him out his junior year, played pretty well for us as a senior. Boy, I wish I would have had him from freshman year on up, but my condolences to Scott and Dick and the family, his sister. Maggie was a wonderful person, and just, you want to talk about a volunteer. That lady was, if she knew about it, she found somebody or did it herself to help people out. So we offer our condolences to the Clark family and the Sheeter family.
Yeah, the sad news came out here just the other day. Yeah, and we our family also offers our condolences. Kenny, you know, last week, weekend was big week of sectionals. I attended the Jasper Vincennes game, and I tell you what, all year long, you know, it's been discussion about how Jasper's just been based kind of bullies on the court. They play a really physical game, and Vincennes actually took their hat away from them and kind of played the aggressor. And I was waiting for Jasper to pounce back and let him have it, and we didn't quite do it. I'm not quite sure what was going on.
Well, you know, I was pretty stymied. I'm sure the coaching staff was too. You know, Jasper was only able to score 25 points in a championship game. And I could be incorrect on this, but I think it's the second year in a row they were in the finals and got it handed to them. Vincennes, of course, was without a main player, maybe their best player, I believe. And a couple of guys had been suspended for a few games and were just getting back, maybe had a game under their belt. Here nor there, I've got to give Coach Hine and Vincennes a lot of credit for being able to overcome whatever adversity and mental intrusions and whatever else was going on, and they were able to pull it together and be tough enough to take Jasper and really throttle him. I wasn't at the game. You were. Very disappointing. Jasper is a better basketball team tradition than that, and they can do it. And I'm sure Coach Gable and Coach Auburn and the staff were very disappointed. I know the players did a good job of overcoming early season woes, but that is not the way you want your basketball team to finish, and not the way any team would finish, especially Jasper. So we are moving into the regional round, and we'll talk about some of the regionals up in Indianapolis and in our local area later on in the show. We'll talk with Travis Madison up around Bar E. We'll talk with Chris Goodman in the Evansville area. Chris does a great job covering high school basketball and high school football on television in the Evansville area. Don Schulteis from Indianapolis will be in to talk to us about the goings-on up there. Tom Deanhart's coming up soon with the Big Ten Network in just a few minutes. And then we'll have Northeast Dubois. Jeeps coach Terry Friedman, who's playing in the regional round as well. NASCAR, quickly. My man, 88, Dale Jr., or as me and my son like to say, Junior. Junior finished second at Phoenix. And, you know, Dale's right up there. He's second in points. He finished fifth in that race, I think second in the first race. But I never get a feeling that he's making that charge the way he needs to. He led some laps at Phoenix, quite a few. But on the restart, a couple of restarts, late restarts, he spun his tires out and lost some ground. And then on the last restart, where he was third or fourth in there, he just couldn't put it together. First in NASCAR Sports is Jimmy Racing Sports is Jimmy Johnson. He's in first place, and we know Jimmy's up there. And then Danica Patrick, who some media people like to push her out there. She continues to disappoint. More wrecks, more unfinished races, female or male, doesn't matter. Lots of money being poured in on her end. Go Daddy, putting the money out there. Go Danica, maybe, instead of Go Daddy. So, I don't know. Joe, what are your thoughts about NASCAR?
I think that Liz Milligan is a chauvinist. She said females should not race in NASCAR. Ooh. I thought maybe she would be a Danica supporter. She is not. She is.
Wow.
I don't know if she supports anybody.
I think females
can
race.
But we're in your family, too.
Females can race. They can do whatever they want. I mean, they're every bit on par with a male, period. But Danica continues to get pumped up and talked about how great she is, and she continues to wreck and disappoint. You know, it's one thing to go around the racetrack individually. And believe me, I'm not a race car driver. Bo Lamastis could probably weigh in on this for us. But Danica can go around the racetrack when there's no other cars out there. But she's not getting it done. So Go Daddy, you keep going and see if Danica can finish a race. Hey, we're going to go to break, and I think when we come back, we have senior writer from the Big Ten Network.com. Tom is going to be with us, and we're going to talk about the Big Ten, spring football, all kinds of things coming up. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll have Mr. Tom, and you're listening to Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by senior writer from the Big Ten Network, Tom Deanhart. Tom, earlier in the show, we were talking about cutting down the nets, and I told the story about in 1984 when you and I won the intramural championship at the Purdue Co-Rec and refused to cut down the nets until the final game. Kenny doubted me. I don't know why he did that, but, you know, but he doubted me. We'll see if we can
I think Tom's going out of his way not to even get involved in that. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Yeah, that was a surreal scene. I was stunned, man. I didn't think there was any way Indiana was going to lose that game on Tuesday. Just like I didn't think there was any way Purdue was going to win at Wisconsin over the weekend. So what do I know? It's just sort of more of the same, another chapter. What's been a crazy, crazy Big Ten season.
You know, Tom, I want to tell our listeners, thousands strong, by the way, to go to btn.com and check out your columns. You've got some really good ones online. We'll talk about one of them in a second, the biggest upsets in Big Ten men's play. But, you know, the thing that I don't quite – it's kind of – this season, at least this last part of the season – of the regular season of the Big Ten is kind of like high tide and low tide. We get teams that are on this tremendous run, and they turn around and shock us. I mean, shock us with the low tide coming in. They get beat by, you know, Michigan getting beat by Penn State. Tom, I know that anybody can beat anybody on a given night, but that's a shocker. IU not holding serve against Ohio State, not that Ohio State wasn't capable, but on such a big night at home, Purdue, Wisconsin kind of falling, Michigan State going through a low. I mean, going into the Big Ten tournament, you kind of get the feeling, hey, four or five teams, this baby's up for grabs, Big Ten tournament time.
Oh, without a doubt, Coach K. Just total, could be total zaniness up there in Chicago next Thursday, beginning next Thursday. And you're right, every team seemingly has had its funk this year. I'm still amazed. You know, Michigan really doesn't have a quality road win. If you look at that team, and I don't know, I still think if you're an elite team, you have to have the ability to go on the road and beat a quality team. And Michigan hasn't done that all year, honestly. Indiana's lost twice at home to Wisconsin, Ohio State. You talked about Michigan State losing three in a row recently. Wisconsin struggles, obviously. On and on it goes. And I guess we're really not going to get an idea of how good this conference is until, you know, for a couple of weeks until the big dance starts, obviously. We've seen them beat up on each other for 2.5 months. Saw some stuff in non-conference play, but that was eons ago. Again, I guess what I'm trying to say is I really wonder maybe how good some of these teams are, honestly. And I won't get my questions answered, like I said, until we get in the big dance and we can see these Big Ten teams locking horns with other, you know, elite teams from across the country.
Well, Tom, I got to tell you something. I am amazed at how we get connected when we get ready to speak to each other, because I'm laying in bed last night, and of course there's better things to do than what I was doing, but I was laying in bed thinking about the Big Ten, thinking the exact same thing. How do we really know how good this conference is or these teams are because – of the way, you know, once you get locked into conference play, I mean, I don't know if Minnesota's as good as sometimes they look or as bad as sometimes they look. And I look at your column, your Big Ten blog, you've got Super 7 biggest upsets in Big Ten play, in men's play, and very first, obviously, and it would be, is Penn State and Michigan. And you're talking about a team, Michigan, that people, I think so many people, have wanted to be on Coach Beilein's, they've wanted to be on that wagon train and say, you know, he's done it at every level. Here he's getting it done at Michigan. But I continue to go back and hearken to this team. Is it built for a tournament run? Limited post play, limited ability to score in the post other than dribble drive, and a lot of times just backing the ball out for a longer three-pointer when the pressure gets on. And then your second biggest is what people consider the best team in the Big Ten and one of the best team in the country, and that's IU. So the two top teams in the Big Ten in most people's eyes, IU and Michigan, are at the top of the list of big losses in the year. Of course, Indiana losing to Minnesota on February 26th. So man, I'm with you. I just don't know where this thing – sets. But now we're going into IU, Michigan. A lot of people talking about this game. Over 120 media credentials have been handed out, maybe more by the time we're talking now. What's your sense about this matchup? Who has the upper hand? Where does this thing end up?
Yeah, you know, and obviously a lot of interested Big Ten teams in the outcome. Obviously Michigan State, Ohio State can earn a share of the Big Ten title if Michigan gets the win. You know what, Coach K and Joe, the Indiana and Michigan seem to be fairly similar, I think. Don't you guys, and how they're built? They like to each kind of get up and down the court. Talented offensive teams, the most talented offensive teams in the conference. Maybe the only ones that can score 80 points in a game. So, again, and when it comes to, I guess, toughness, you wonder how tough is Indiana, how tough is Michigan. So that's sort of a question there as well. For what it's worth, Michigan's the only unbeaten team at home in the Big Ten, you know, 17-0, so they've been awfully, awfully good in their own house. We know what's on the line for Michigan. A lot of motivation there. Of course, Indiana motivated, too, to get that first outright Big Ten title in 20 years. But, again, Indiana comes in having lost 2 out of 3 games. Michigan comes in off that emotional win, a gritty win at West Lafayette. So a little different psyches coming in for both teams. I guess in the end, I feel like Michigan finds a way to get it done. Behind Trey Burke, honestly, guys, and tell me, give me your thoughts on this. I think Trey Burke has wrapped up the Big Ten Player of the Year award. And I'd also love to hear your guys' thoughts on Indiana. If they lose, that would be 3 losses in 4 games. What do you think the Hoosiers then will have to do in Chicago? You think they've fallen off the number one line? Can they fall off the number one line? Will they still play in the Midwest in the NCAA tournament no matter what happens in Chicago?
Well, let me touch base on the first part of that and that Trey Burke. And I would say that if you're looking for total consistency, he's probably given it. You know, at one point I thought Oladipo might be up in there, but he's had a couple games. I can think of Illinois, and I can think of this most recent game against Ohio State. He just struggled. He just didn't seem mentally out there. But Trey Burke seems to bring it every game. Now, he may take some ill-advised shots. He may make some shots more difficult than he needs to, but I think he seems to bring it. As far as the number one, you know, I don't know. I think so many people have just committed themselves to IU overall being a number one seed, but you're right. But again, is a loss to Michigan, who is considered one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the nation all through the year, does that hurt them that much on the road at Michigan? Joe, what are your thoughts on that?
Joe.
I'll tell you what, I don't have much opinion on IU because I usually get emails and texts from listeners when I discuss IU. But you know, if you lose 3 out of 4, and then you know, it's just going to depend on the tournament. You know, they win one game in the tournament and lose to them. Like, you know, I've got to thinking. You know, I haven't really looked at the brackets at all. But you know, if they get lined up with Michigan State, you know, Michigan State got beat by them twice, and they've got to be a little motivated. And if Michigan State would get them.
Yeah.
If you lose 4 out of 6, I don't see any way that they can give you a number one seed in the tournament.
What about tournament? How much does tournament play into the seeding part? I mean, I know it helps some people get in, but what about the seeding part? I mean, do you go in the tournament if you lose? Does that knock you out of a high seed?
You know, I think, you know, honestly, just to back up a little bit, that's probably the only real intrigue in Chicago, honestly, guys. I think the Big Ten's locked in at 7 teams for bids. Of course, we could get a miraculous run by Iowa. But that's the only way a team like Iowa or anybody else is getting in, is just to win the Big Ten title. So, and that's not going to happen, I'll just say that. So anyway, the only intrigue is going to be jockeying for NCAA seats in Chicago. And, again, I don't think anybody's going to hurt their seeding +1 or -1 either way, regardless of what goes on up there. Again, even Indiana, guys, even if they stumble in the first or second round and they fall from the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, most people seem to think they're still going to get seeded or placed in the Midwest. They're still going to play in Lexington or Dayton. and then go through Indianapolis in the regional. So, again, even if Indiana's not the number one overall seed, most don't think they're going to get knocked out of the Midwest as being the top seed there. So, again, that just leads me to think, even if the first or second round loss, even with the loss Sunday, I think Indiana's still going to be a top seed in the Midwest. And going through the Midwest is the most important thing, as you know, guys. Big crowds in Dayton or Lexington, huge crowds in Indy, and then you're on to Atlanta.
Well, I just wonder how much – I think what really happens is this Michigan-IU game, how these teams come out and play. If it's a close game, if they're playing on all cylinders, I think that if you're seeding the NCAA, the big dance, you're probably saying, yes, they're maintaining where we thought they would be. Let me ask you about one other team in the Big Ten, and then I want to ask you about the spring part of football. What's going on with Wisconsin? All of a sudden, Wisconsin looks so good, and then looked tough, mentally tough and focused. And then, you know, the other night, at their senior night, they're messing around in the warm-ups. I mean, they haven't played particularly well. What's your feeling on Wisconsin? You know, Bo usually has his team primed and ready to move forward. Have they hit a little? Have they hit a bump in the road here? Is there something we don't know about?
Well, yeah, Coach K, they hit a bump mid-season too. It's no secret. You know, this team offensively is over relying on the jump shot and the three pointer in particular. And if they're not falling, we see what we saw last night. We see what we saw against Purdue over the weekend. An ugly team. The constants from Bo Ryan are always great defense, few turnovers. They're not going to beat themselves. But again, the wild card has been the offensive production, the shooting in particular, over-reliance, like I said, on the jumper, not enough in the paint, not enough off the dribble, honestly. They don't have, the point guard play, you know, George Marshall, Trayvon Jackson, Ben Bruss, those aren't guys you're going to put the ball on the floor necessarily consistently and always beat you to the rim. So, again, if their jumpers aren't falling, they get very ordinary very quickly here.
Well, I'm gonna switch you over to something that, you know, the football fans are all talking about. We got spring drills starting, and I talked to a lot of Ohio State fans. And I just want to ask you, because I know that you keep the pulse on football, and, of course, this is a magic ball question, but who better to ask it to than you, Tom, a magic ball question. Spring practice begins. A lot of people in Columbus are excited about Urban and the Ohio State Buckeyes. Let me ask you this question. With the pressure on this year, because it was kind of a pass last year, pressure on this year, can Ohio State, with the mental change, can they go undefeated again in the Big Ten throughout their season? Can they go undefeated?
It's going to be tough, Coach K. You talked about, or you made a good point of talking about last year, no real pressure, knowing you can't go to a bowl, obviously. So now again, the pressure gets ratcheted up, and the expectations are real this year. Probation's over. I'll tell you this, look at the schedule. Non-conference schedule still is very soft, so that's going to play in their favor. And the Big Ten schedule, just to note, they have to go to Michigan this year. Again, then they're going to have the target on their back as well coming in the year as a highly ranked team. A lot of different dynamics, some of them intangible dynamics. Personnel-wise, watch the defense, the front seven. That's where Ohio State's concerned. The entire defensive line's gone. Two key linebackers are gone as well. So there's talent in Ohio State, but there may be some development, a needle up front on defense, and the non-conference schedule should allow for it. So they're going to be the overwhelming favorite. But, Coach K, can they go unbeaten? I guess I don't think so. But I still think they're going to be in Indianapolis with a good chance to win the Big Ten championship, and they should win the Big Ten championship.
Well, last thing, Tom, BTN.com, you've got a column up. College Football Hall of Fame released its ballot. 21 of the 77 on the ballot are Big Ten connected. Surprises of somebody not being on that you thought might be?
Not really off the top of my head. I guess I'm surprised it's taken some guys, a little while to get elected. Tommy Frazier in particular, the Nebraska quarterback. I know he did his work when they were a Big 12, a Big 8 school. But still, I'm surprised he's still not in there. And then Eric Crouch, of course, being a Heisman Trophy winner back in 2001, is still waiting as well. So it'll be interesting to see who those Big Ten players gets in. A lot of good names there. And it's always a fun process to see those honorees. And like I said, the announcement on who got elected, I believe, will be in May. So keep your eyes and ears peeled up for that announcement.
Well, definitely all good stuff. And listeners, I encourage you, go to btn.com, look up Tom Dienert's stuff. Great stuff. It's going to keep you informed on the basketball, on the football, everything that you need to know outside the lines as well as inside the lines. He's going to keep you updated. Thanks for being on, Tom. Great stuff again. And I'm sure you'll be there and enjoying the Big Ten tournament.
Yeah, I'll be up in Chicago, guys. I always appreciate you having me on. Take care, Coach K and Joe, and have a good weekend, guys.
We will. Again, great to have Tom back on the show. And, man, I'm going to try to go up to Chicago, Joe, and see if I can hook up with Tom. He's probably a lot more fun than you are. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
We should mate.
What?
Date. I said we should date sometime, you know, socially. Go out and kick it. Are you okay?
I'm fine. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, you know, in some cultures, they only eat vomit. I've never been there, but I read about it in a book.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Okay, we're back on the show, and Tom Dienert, he's just got such good stuff. Folks, you need to go to btn.com and check out his stuff. He'll keep you involved, and I love the snippet coming back in. Hey, Joe, kind of reminds me growing up of some of the guys we were out with, you know, Doug Kuntz and a few other people. Cooney might have made that vomit statement.
Oh, I imagine so. You know, I could see it too. You know, pup holes, possibly a jail or I, you know, you just never know. But, hey, I've want to read a couple more texts that I've received about our we'll call it Netgate. How about that? Okay. Netgate. This is from Chris, a longtime listener from Jasper. He says, Coach Green shouldn't have to defend for letting his team cut down the nets. The team, and more importantly, the seniors who have been through the entire rebuilding process deserve to celebrate the first Big Ten championship since a split championship in 2002. Anyone who calls themselves a Hoosier fan should be backing Coach Crean and this Hoosier team. Real Hoosier fans need to remember behind the team, remember they can still win the Big Ten for themselves and are still legit contenders to win it all. Go Hoosiers. Now, in retrospect, I've got another text here. Let me pull it up. It's from Ken, and he's from Evansville. I don't think it's you, is it?
It's not me.
Okay. And Ken says, cutting down the nets is a big, big joke. We Kentucky fans would never cut the nets down after a loss. It just shows how far IU's program has fallen. I don't know if it's fallen. It's in pretty good shape right now, you know.
Well, but Joe, you know, I'm not saying that Chris is not right in supporting the team. I'm not saying I see where Ken's coming from, but I got to tell you, I don't know that it was wrong. I'm just not sure it was appropriate. First of all, I don't get cut in the nets for a conference championship. Like I said, tournament, yes, but I don't get the cut in the nets. That must be something that has developed, and maybe because he's connected to Izzo, they talked about what do you do. But I would have rather seen them acknowledge the fact they were co-champs, get the cheers, even if they want to drop a banner. I've got no problem with that. But here's the whole thing. The game doesn't start till 9 o'clock Eastern time. We play absolutely subpar. Now, I'm going to give Ohio State credit, and I was going to text our friend Kurt Guxel and say, look who woke up on third base. You know, a couple comments he's made about Thad Matta. Ohio State did a great job. I don't know that Ohio State outcoached IU. They certainly outplayed IU, and it was indicative of a team that made some corrections before they came in after IU's dominating win at Ohio State. Let's not forget, IU went in and dominated Ohio State in Columbus. But don't know that it was with everything that went on, the loss, the senior night, which you got to have. That's our tradition. I got no problem with that. I got no problem with cheering. I got no problem with a banner. I do have a problem with bringing ladders out, putting hats on guys, and act like they just won a tournament championship and cutting down nets after a disappointing loss. I don't think it was appropriate. Chris, I'm for IU. I don't always agree with Coach Green, but he's the boss. People don't always agree with me, but I'm right. Joe, well, questionable.
I'll tell you what, talking about dominating performances, Coach K, Bar Reeves' performance last week against Lagodi in that final game must have been pretty dominating, and we now are joined by Travis Madison. Maybe he can fill us in since you and I were not able to witness the event. But, Travis, before we get started, you know, last week we kind of became a tradition. Every time you come on, we start out with a Coach K story. Do you have one for us again?
Oh, actually, I've got a really good one.
Okay.
I'm sitting here. I actually am having lunch with my two brothers today. We don't get to do this very often. My younger brother's up from Florida, and I actually had to step away from the table. I told him I was calling in. So we actually discussed this prior to me going on the air today. And I like I told you last week, we've got so many. But I think my brother Ty wanted to share one. I think he and Coach had even spoken about this recently. And Coach can attest to this. When he took the WC job, he obviously heard some notorious stories about my brother Ty, who was kind of a challenge in those days for my parents a little bit. He was maybe the rebellious one of the three, but I think there were a couple times where Ty came home with brand new practice jerseys, and I think he always told my parents that he played so hard in practice that he was able to earn a new jersey, when maybe many times that jersey, some things that happened to it during practice to where he was again, maybe needed to get his attention a little bit. But he was always told my parents, and I think they knew better, that he had practiced so hard that he deserved a new practice jersey today. So we were just talking about that at lunch. But Coach could probably tell plenty of stories on him and the rest of us too. So
now if you're having lunch in Montgomery, you got to be stopped and see visiting Glenn Spaulding, right? Or were you?
Well, I ventured over to Washington. My brother owns a business over here, and we just went right across the street from his business. He does flooring, so we met over here, and my brother Toby just got in town yesterday with his son and his new little girl. So we actually met over here real quick. So I ventured over to them today.
Well, if I could take the Madison three, I think I would match up pretty well against the Duncan trio at Harrison. But talk about three pretty solid players and have turned into three pretty solid adults. Travis, just watch what you tell. You never know when I'll have a story on
That's
you.
That's true. We need to watch those traditions, yeah.
That's
pretty,
okay. I enjoy that you guys remember a lot of that stuff. That's pretty neat. Let's talk a little Bali Viking basketball, Travis.
Sure.
Sectional championship for the Vikings. They have one loss. They revenged that loss against the Lagodi Lions. Obviously a great game, a packed house at Lagodi. And before we get into Bar Eves, moving on to the regional, give us a quick recap on that game.
Well, I tell you what, you know, I have not seen Coach Hughes as satisfied or as happy after a win as I felt like I saw him on Saturday night. And obviously, you know, I've been at Bar Reeve now for 11 years and have seen some big wins for the Vikings over that course of time and two trips to the state finals. But I felt like he just, I think the comments he made after the game was he's never seen a team as focused as this team was. And as far as the attention to detail to the game plan they had instilled and just felt like that they executed it to the T. And basically the only thing you could probably point to that he would say is something he would have liked differently is I think there was a couple of front ends of a one-on-one that they missed there in the middle part of the fourth quarter when Ligoti was trying to come back. But outside of that, he was very impressed. He got a great performance, you know, out of Jacob Bledsoe's senior center who did a great job, you know, early in the game establishing a post presence. And they went to a 3-2 zone and he'd seen that work several times during the course of the season against Ligoti. So they worked on that and kind of had it laying there in case they saw them in the sectional final. And the kids did a great job of executing in that zone, making sure they found the shooters and made the perimeter shots tough. But they also were able to take away the inside presence of Whitmer and Wagler, the Wagler boy they have that have been playing so good and taking away their high-low situations. And we basically dominated the boards on both ends. So, and I think those things were things that he told the boys they were going to be key. And I've never seen him as pleased after a win as he was the other night in the way that those boys executed.
Well, without being at the game and not being a part of any of the game planning, I would have said after watching Ligoti a couple times this year and actually seeing the Bar Eve Ligoti game at Bar Eve, that high-low was a critical part of making sure that you were focused on and taken care of. And getting back to controlling those boards was also important. And it didn't shock me that the Vikings came up with the win. Of course, it's on the Ligoti court, but Bar Eve and Ligoti are so close in distance and have played so many games and spent so much time on that court that even though it's a Ligoti home court, yeah, I don't know that come tournament time it has the home court advantage that it may have for some other teams that come in there. For our listeners who are not from this local area outside of Indiana, we have a lot of them. Can you give them just a brief description of what the fan, the numbers, the enthusiasm was like in the gym?
Well, Friday night was unbelievable. I mean, I got there to do the radio, and of course, Barty had the second game, but got there shortly after the doors opened, and of course, you know, Shoals, North Davies, Bar Eve, and Ligoti were well represented. It was standing room only, people packing in. And then on Saturday night, you know, it was 20, 30 minutes before the teams took the floor, and you know, the gym was at capacity, and then you know, one thing that you get at this section was you get those teams that are playing, but there's a lot of interest even around our area, and with Washington being eliminated the night before, you had a lot of folks from the area that wanted to see what happened in this next chapter. So you had a lot of folks around that are casual fans but wanted to basically just be there for this part of for this game because they know obviously that there's been some classics over the years and they wanted to be here and be a part of it. So you just saw a lot of people even from outside of those two schools that were there as well. But just a great atmosphere. Both sections, the fans get into it. The students are well represented to get into it. And it gets heated at times, but I feel like it's both schools and both communities respect the heck out of each other, and it doesn't mean we don't want to beat them, you know, beat them like crazy. But at the same time, I think obviously a lot of our folks were happy to see Ligoti do well last year. I know I was because you know you get to know some of those kids, you know how hard they work, the Ackermans and the Whitmers and all those kids, and so I was happy for them to do that last year, and I feel like I know I've heard from a lot of folks over there this week hoping that the Vikings can maybe duplicate what they've done last year, but we'll just take it one game at a time.
Well, you know, for our listeners, we're not talking, even though these are small communities and the smallest class, we're not talking about 800 or 1,000 people. We're talking about several thousand people coming into these games, and that's what Hoosier Hysteria is all about. We're fast-forwarding now to the regional. We've got that coming up this weekend, and Bar Eve's taking on Northeast Dubois, a team that coming into the season was highly touted with some returners. They had some injuries, some issues, but have recovered well, won a nice sectional over at Wood Memorial, beating Day School in the first round, which was huge because they were ranked and favored, but they come out of there as the sectional champs. Your thoughts on the Bari Vikings and Dubois matchup?
Well, obviously they're a team that's peaking at the right time, and you know, we've faced him many times over the years, being in the conference with him, and Coach Friedman does a great job, and I know he's got his boys playing well, and we did face him earlier in the season, but just as we can point to our kids, what Lagodi came in and did to us on our floor, you know, those regular season matchups really don't mean a thing at this point. I know looking at that game on our schedule early in the season, we were looking forward to it because we knew that we were going to be tested. Dubois is a very physical team. They've got a lot of different guys that can do a lot of different things to hurt you. They've got some great quickness, very strong, very physical. And we played them, you know, a pretty close first half, and then we were able to break away in the second half in that regular season matchup. And really the difference in that game was our sophomore Addison Wagler had his career high 31, and he just did a great job of getting the ball inside, and they didn't have a lot of answers for him. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of defense that Coach Friedman will employ Saturday. And just as you guys mentioned earlier about the Ohio State IU, you know, that gave the coach an opportunity to really look at the tape and make some adjustments. And I would expect probably some different things they would throw at us. So hopefully our boys can make those adjustments and realize that regular season game was a long time ago, and they'll have to be ready to play, because I know Dubois is playing really well right now, and they're peaking at tourney time, which is what you want your team to be doing. And, you know, and last week's last week. You got to be ready to lace them up at 12 o'clock on Saturday, because you know the Dubois tradition is they're going to come in and give you everything they got. They play hard. They're going to have they're going to be ready to play. So we got to make sure we match that effort.
Yeah, and you're right, and you really have to mentally get your kids to let go of the earlier game, because this becomes a trap, what I call a trap game. You know, they're thinking about, oh, we handled them, that wasn't any issue. But teams mature, they develop, they get healthy, coaches make adjustment, change up, because this team doesn't run the offense the way we thought it would. They make adjustments defensively. You know, when you played for me and your brothers played for me, we made adjustments from one point in the season always to the end of the season. And teams that get caught up on what they did before, what happened before, this where it becomes a stickler for them. The other two teams in the regional are Borden and Orleans, I believe. What can you tell us quickly about Borden and Orleans?
Well, Orleans, obviously, we faced as well. It was basically one of our first three games of the year, And I look at Orleans as a program very similar to ours. I think they mirror each other in a lot of ways. Small school, very well coached, fundamentally sound. Coach Bradley does a wonderful job. They run a lot of sets. They play very sound defense. They don't beat themselves a lot of times. They make you go out and make the plays to beat them. And they've had some injuries they've had to deal with, but yeah, it seems like they've been able to bounce back and continue on and finish the season strong as well. They lost one of their better players to a concussion, and I don't think he'll be eligible Saturday, but they've had guys step in, and that's kind of a staple of a great program, where you've got guys on the reserve or guys there that are sitting on the bench that could come in and do just as good a job, if, you know, as the folks that you've got off the floor because of an injury or what have you. But there'll be a tough out. You know, like I say, Coach Bradley's teams are they're well schooled, they're fundamentally sound, and they'll make you play to beat them. They're not going to give anything away, and I think they've had some battles with Borden over the years in regular season and then also in tournament time. And Coach Nash's team, we faced them, I think in 2008, but they've consistently been a team that to be reckoned with in their area of the state. He does a great job. Again, a lot like Orleans and Barrie and Dubois, I think you've just got a lot of kids that buy into the team concept. They buy into what the coach is doing. They spend the time in and around the season working on their games, and they've had a great season. They lost some close games, but they've been consistent all year long, and they'll take care of the basketball. They've got a little bit of size inside. It'll be a good matchup between them and Orleans. I think they played a 1-point game earlier in the year, and it was a very slow paced game. I think they was in the 30s. But they'll do what they do, and they're going to make you beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. So it'll be interesting. We hope they go to like three overtimes in that first game and wear each other out. But again, you'll see a good matchup in that first game. Two well-coached teams, fundamentally sound. They do things the right way. And again, the one neat thing is I think it'll be another unbelievable atmosphere at Lagodi. I know they gave each team 800 tickets, and I think they're they'll sell those and then some. And because all these schools, their fans do a wonderful job of supporting them and getting out, and they'll be excited to see what happens on Saturday.
Well, it's always good to talk to you. And did your brother Toby bring the new baby along?
Yeah, she's here today. So they uh, Everybody's home. He's going to be home for about a week now. His son's on spring break, so he's excited. He's not been home since July because they had the baby over the holidays, so it's been a while since he's been home, and he likes to get around to see, especially the tournament games, because it's something you don't see down in Florida where he's at, and football's king down there, but he also likes to come up and either attend the Washington Regional, and then in the past few years, I'm not going to say I've converted him all the way to be a Viking fan, but both of them will come, and obviously they support me and support the kids. And Toby's actually gotten the opportunity to work with some of the Vikings in the summertime a little bit. I know last year he worked with Logan James, the freshman point guard, a few times and put him through some workouts. And he's obviously he knows a lot of the kids and actually married a local girl. So we may have converted him a little bit, but he just loves coming and watching the games. And so they'll be in attendance tomorrow and just to take in the atmosphere.
Well, we got to try to get together, and especially since you got the keys to the gym. We go 2-on-2. Toby's on my team because I know he'll pass me the ball. You and Ty, you got to fight it out for the shots because I know both of you like to shoot a lot. Not that Toby didn't, but I know he'll pass me the ball. So let's figure out when we're getting together and when we're playing 2-on-2 on the Kavanaugh floor.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for being with us, Travis. Again, Bar Eve goes to the regional round. They'll be matching up with Northeast Du Bois. We'll be talking to Terry and later in the show. We're going to go to break, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We are going to do what we set out to do. We're going to win that tournament.
Yes! I knew it. I knew you were a champion the minute I saw you bowl, Ish.
I'm not going to bowl. You are.
You are such a loser. You're a bona fide schmuck. Look at me!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. I've got a quick text here from Sarah in Evansville. She says, what did you think, Coach K, of the modern-day Wildcat girls basketball team? Well, I think they're state champs again, and I think they've got a great shot at winning 3 in a row, although I think the success rule is going to come into play, which I think penalizes high school teams. It doesn't in any way help the game. They do move up to 3A, but Munsterman and Schickel and that whole team, they've got a great squad. They're well coached, but I'll tell you what, those girls have talent, and they make a lot of coaches look good. So that's what I think about them. I think they're pretty good, and I think they got a good shot at winning a third championship on the 3A this next year, and boy, wouldn't that be an accomplishment. Speaking of accomplishments, the goodie, Chris Goodman, is with us. We're going to talk a little boys regional in the Evansville area. We're going to be talking specifically about 3A Bossy, 4A Harrison. But you know what, Chris, before we get going, you can give your thoughts on the Lady Wildcats at modern day and especially this 3A movement deal.
Yeah, you know, I got a chance to see them on TV, and I was really impressed with the way that you know, I didn't think Minsterman had her best game, and she still, you know, obviously gets rebounds and assists, but they were able to handily win in 2A without, you know, her even having one of her best games. I mean, it just shows, you know, what kind of depth they have and how far they've come from last year. I mean, granted, you win a state title, you think, well, maybe the next year you're going to improve a little bit, but I think that team improved by a sizable amount, and it's kind of scary to think that they could probably do it again, and I think they have a really good chance to win in 3A.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about potentially 3 state championships in a row, you start thinking about history, and you start thinking about the Marion Giants and teams like that, and even going way, way back it just doesn't happen very often, and I know we're in class basketball, so it does change it a little bit. But one thing, Chris, and you don't have to get yourself in a bind here, but I don't like this success rule. I think it penalizes teams. I'm going to tell you why I think it does, and let you throw some thoughts on this. In modern day's case, it's a little different because a lot of those girls are coming back. But you're talking about the success rule, forcing a team to go up in a class, even though their enrollment hasn't, go up in a class when some of these kids may have even graduated, when an entire starting five could be graduating. And I think you're penalizing the team coming behind because the whole point of class sports, Bobby Cox, if you're listening, the whole point of class sports was to give schools with smaller enrollments more opportunities to be successful. If we're going to do the success rule, let's just go back to a one-class tournament or a two-class tournament and go from there. But otherwise, I think this is absolutely against the parochial schools. I think it penalizes success. It doesn't reward it.
Yeah, and I think in other states you see that some of the parochial schools have their own class or their own division, and you kind of wonder if maybe they should go towards that someday. But, you know, I wasn't a big fan of going to class basketball to begin with, and I don't think many of the people who are around that saw the class or the classless basketball, I should say, or without a class, that's probably better terminology, that I don't think they were a big fan because you lost the crowds and everything, and now you've got these additional rules coming in, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I'm not a big fan of that either.
Okay, I guess I should get off the soapbox, but I'll be back on it at some point, I'm sure. Hey, Chris, we've got some good basketball coming up this weekend. We got an Evansville Bossy team led by a top 20 junior in the nation, Jaquan Lyle, and Quan, as they call him, 27 points a game, 13 rebounds, almost 7 assists. Wow, this guy can play, and I tweeted the other day, yesterday, I think I tweeted or Facebook that he, you know, as tough as he is, he's got people who criticize him out there. I got to tell you, this guy can play, and he's made his teammates better. Of course, Bo Burkhart, junior guard, Perry Farrow, a junior, small forward, 20 points a game. This Bossy team is a solid team.
Yeah, and I don't know where that criticism comes from. I think I've heard some people allude to the fact that maybe he's a little soft and he's a junior and maybe he's afraid to go inside, but I haven't seen that. We've done a couple of television games on Local 7 where it looked like he wasn't scared at all to go inside when he needed to. I mean, there were times when he just stood outside and shot his jumper, and it's because he has such a good shot. He has such a good eye for making good assists. He made great passes. We did one of the games earlier this year, and I was watching Jaquan, and I was thinking, my gosh, this guy's ready for college right now. He's a junior, and you can't say that about many high school juniors. It's almost the equivalent of, you know, once they're a senior saying, well, he's ready for the NBA. You know, I mean, you just don't see the fact that you think, well, this guy probably could go to a lot of Division I teams at the end of his junior year and probably start. You know, as a senior in high school, he could probably start for some of these college basketball teams. I think he is that polished and that good. He does it all so well. He's an excellent shooter, excellent rebounder. He's an excellent passer. I mean, I think the sky's the limit for him, and I know he hasn't signed with anybody yet, but I think next year we'll see some pretty big-time coaches coming to scout him.
Yeah, and then I got to tell you, I like some of his development maturity-wise, and folks, you got to remember, here's a young guy thrust on to the national scene, literally the national scene. Indianapolis Star, Kyle Neddenrip did a nice article on him and the team. I think that his work ethic this summer has to be the best it's ever been, and if he will do that and surround himself with good people, I think he's just going to be an outstanding player. Let me ask you this, Chris, because you've seen him several times. Do they have the depth, the team Bossy? Do the Bulldogs have the depth to make a deep run in the 3A tournament?
You know, I think they do, and surprisingly enough, they had Jalen Pendleton on the team last year, and I really thought that was a good chance, but then seeing them this year a couple of times, I think they've replaced Pendleton as well as they possibly could, losing a player of that talent. He, of course, went to Southern Illinois and plays for the Salukis and got a lot of playing time as a freshman, but I think they have a lot of depth, like you said, Perry Farrell, Bo Burkhart, but it goes much deeper than that. They run in a lot of different players. Of course, Shane Burkhart's probably not going to freely substitute as much as he did during the regular season now that they're in the postseason because obviously they want to win, but I mean, you look at their losses, losses to Jeffersonville, Dayton Marshall of Ohio, Central, Castle, Harrison. The teams that they've lost to are all pretty much really either bigger schools or really good teams. And you look at that and you think, well, they've lost five games, but now here they are. They've won five in a row. They're in Class 3A. I think they absolutely have a chance to go to state. I don't know if that'll happen or not. You never know with I always say this with high school kids, and I'm probably preaching to the choir because you were a high school coach, but you never know what's going to happen in the postseason. But I think if the chips fall where they are and they're shooting and having a good shooting night, Bo Burkhart, Perry Farrell, those guys are going to have to step up. It can't just be Lyle. Nobody's going to say, well, hey, we're going to let Jaquan Lyle score his, 40 points a game. They're not going to do that. They're going to key on him, and the other guys are going to have to knock down jumpers.
Yeah, and what I really like is that Perry Farrow has done what he needs to do. Kind of, I don't want to call him a second fiddle because he's played outstanding, but he has played his game consistently. When they double team Lyle, when they nail him coming across that half court and they're all over him, he's been able to get the ball, take the pass, make the move. He's played pretty well. So I think as a duo, they've been pretty strong, and of course, Bo Burkhart does a good job with the basketball and knocking down some of the threes. Let's jump over to 4A, a team that I have just been excited about. I don't know where to rank them as far as how really good they are, but I can tell you they have been a consistent team throughout the season, no matter who they played, where they played, when they played. The Harrison Warriors, obviously we got to start with the Duncan Trio, the sophomore twins, the junior point guard. How about this team and the consistency they've shown throughout the year?
Yeah, I kind of thought coming into the year that this was a team that was going to be a live-by-the-three, die-by-the-three kind of team. But I think they've really established that they're not that. They do rely quite a bit on the three-pointer, and of course Ernie and Everett and Stanley can all shoot it, but I think they've got a pretty good inside game, and one of the X factors I think coming up in the regional for them will be Danico Scott. I think he has just been fabulous on the interior. He's a very underrated player. I know the Duncans get a lot of the publicity and a lot of the coverage, a lot of the interviews, but I think Scott, anytime you have a guy inside, he's a lefty, he's tall, he's long, he's about 6'7", 6'8", any kind of time you have a guy that can block shots, and you guys and everybody around the tri-state saw, what it meant to have somebody like a Zeller. And I'm not comparing him to Zeller by any means or any of the Zellers, but to have somebody in the interior to complement that outside game and the fact that the Duncans pass it around well, I think this team, kind of the sky's the limit. I think Brian Spears done a phenomenal job, and the good news is for them is regardless of what happens this year, they're going to have most of those players back next season.
Yeah, and I think Coach Spear has done a really good job of keeping the balance. You don't hear a lot of crazy stuff about them. They've played the good teams on their schedule, and they beat the good teams on their schedule. I got to see them the other night in the sectional, one of the opening round games. I thought they were very consistent. I was surprised at how easy they do things. It almost looks like they're not going at an urgent speed or full speed, but they are. They just do it so smooth and easy. The Duncan Trio complements each other. They can penetrate a little bit. They can shoot the three, as you pointed out. I love Danico Scott, just like you do. I love what he brings to the team. All of a sudden you think, well, we'll get past those three guys, and here's this unsung hero standing there with a hand in your face, some quickness, rebounding, or just getting the offensive rebound and putting it back in, or the easy bounce pass from Ernie, or a kickoff from Everett or Stanley, and being able to respond and put it in. This is a good team. This is a team that, 4A has a lot of good teams in it, so you just don't know how deep they can go, but I'll tell you what, they're coming up against a pretty good Jeffersonville team.
Yeah, and I think I said, I told some people after watching Harrison play a couple of times that it's probably one of the deeper and probably one of the more talented Evansville City School teams I've seen in some time, just the fact that they have – so many guys that they can go to, and they're much deeper than Duncan's and Scott's. They have some great subs, some guys that come in and get quality minutes. But you're right, their work's cut out for them. Jeffersonville, coached by Chad Gilbert, who played at USI, helped lead them to a national title back in 95, a team that's won back-to-back Hoosier Hill Conference titles, and they got a player, Daryl Baker. I don't know if you saw the game or not when we were doing on Local 7 when Daryl Baker played against Castle, and he was just unbelievable. And he's going to go the JUCO route. He hasn't signed to play, I don't think, anywhere yet, but this kid is just completely unbelievable and looks like a man among boys. At least he did when he was playing the Castle Knights. But that team's deeper than just Daryl Baker. They've got Miles Harvey and Drew Ellis. I remember watching those guys and thinking, this is a really, really good team. But here's the hitch. Earlier in the year, Harrison did beat this same Jeffersonville team. So you got to wonder, you know, how much that plays into the psyche of Jeffersonville and how much that will play into the psyche of Harrison. You beat them once already. Does Jeffersonville come back to trying to get revenge and trying to, you know, obviously end the season for the Harrison Warriors? Or does Harrison go on and win? It's going to be neat to see those two teams hook up, because I think if you buy a ticket to a high school basketball team, if you don't have any plans this weekend, if you want to see an unbelievable game with a ton of talent on both ends of the floor, go see this game, because I think Harrison versus Jeffersonville is absolutely where it's at.
Yeah, and not only is there a ton of talent, Chris, they play good basketball. They play good team basketball, and they play good, smart, athletic basketball. I believe Baker and Jeffersonville, didn't they come in early in the year and beat Bossy on a last-second shot?
They did. They did beat Bossy, and it was a close loss for Bossy. But, yeah, Jeffersonville did that. They came in and did. They pretty much, I think they won by 20 or so at Castle towards the end of the year in the game that we did on Local 7. But they really flexed a lot of muscle. I mean, just watching them, they had some good younger players, too, as well, not just Daryl Baker. But, I mean, that's a team that is absolutely loaded. I think Chad Gilbert has them playing well. And like you said, they're very disciplined. Harrison's going to have to be very disciplined, which they are. But I think that game could come right down to the wire either way. And I wish we were doing that as a television game. We're not doing a television game this weekend, but that's kind of, as a broadcaster, that's kind of the games you want to do, because you just had this feeling, this is, might be an overtime. It's going to be a packed house, and it's just going to be an unbelievable game, I think.
Yeah, and I did catch that Castle Jeff game. You did a great job, as always, on the tube. You definitely bring the expertise, and you just do it so well. I always get compliments from people when you're on the show, saying, man, we love listening to Chris Goodman. He just comes across so well. And maybe that's because you're in with me, and I don't come across so well. But either way, you're getting the compliment. Chris,
I think you're making stuff up now. But
I don't know. Hey,
thank you, though.
The North sectional, the Evansville sectional, 4A sectional, I was out there and had some really good crowds. I think they can be even bigger, but they were really good crowds, bigger than I thought they would be, but had some really good teams out there. Were you surprised that Central took Castle out in that first round?
You know, yes and no. I mean, I think from year in and year out, when you see teams play one another, you realize that that sectional, among every sectional, is probably the one where you expect the upsets, because it almost happens every year. And, I mean, even a team like Wrights, you can't overlook Wrights. You can't overlook Central. You can't overlook North. I mean, it's just all those teams are just, I mean, I wouldn't say they're even this year. Obviously, if you look at Harrison and Castle, probably talent-wise, those teams probably have a little bit of, you know, at least a little bit of an advantage over those teams. But they're so competitive with each other, and that they play each other during the regular season. They've seen each other. They kind of know their game plans. They play each other probably and pick up basketball within the city. So these guys know each other. They have a lot to kind of play for when they're playing in that sectional, because they know they can end somebody's season. So I'm never completely surprised when that happened. And Central had a decent year. I think the Bears had some big wins. I think I was talking about it earlier. They beat Bossy. I mean, they were obviously very capable at certain points in time. All the teams in that higher class, I think, could beat one another.
You know, I'm going to put you on the spot, Chris, before we let you go. Just a couple of things here. You covered a lot of basketball this year, and you did it well. If you had to pick an MVP in the Evansville of the Evansville schools in the Pocket City, MVP basketball-wise, who would it be?
Boy, that has put me on the spot, isn't it? I would say it would probably be a tie between Jaquan Lyle and Ernie Duncan. I would probably do co-MVPs. I don't think you could take anything away from either one of those guys. Jaquan probably has the gaudier numbers. 27 points, 13 rebounds is pretty good. But if you look at Ernie Duncan, he's a 1,000-point scorer. He set the single-season record for assists at his high school. And you know Harrison has some pretty unbelievable tradition with the players that have come in and out of there. So, I mean, I think I would probably tie those guys and probably give Jaquan a little bit of a nod just because his numbers are a little bit better.
Ernie Duncan, of course, the junior at Harrison. I don't know what his level of play is when he goes up, gets out of high school yet, but I will say that I've been impressed with his consistency. I've been impressed with how he shared the spotlight with his younger brothers. And folks, let me tell you something. Sometimes sharing the spotlight with your younger siblings is not easy to do. And I've seen that in different players over the year, but they've done a great job. So both to Coach Spear and to the Duncan family, they've done a great job of raising those kids. Who would be a player who surprised you this year?
I'm going to go back, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I thought Danico Scott was just incredible. I mean, the games we did and the fact that he's a force inside and the fact that he probably hasn't been talked about a lot in the recruiting circles and you don't hear his name being mentioned, I think he's absolutely a D1-level player. I don't know where he's going to end up, but I think he has the skills to do something for somebody on the college level, and he may end up going the JUCO route. I'm not sure what he's doing, but that's probably one of the players. I thought, you know, Blake Simmons had a great year. I don't want to take anything away from him. He probably should be in that MVP mix with those other two kids, with the Duncan and Jaquan Lyle. Did he surprise me? No, I kind of expected them to have a really good year. So probably the surprise of the year for me would be Danico Scott.
Well, I think Evansville basketball overall had a solid year, and there's some good young players. I saw that out at that sectional, and I know Memorial's got some good young players. They didn't have the season they would like, and Modern Day's working itself back up, but I think there's going to be some good years to come. You know, Wrights has a nice team, Coach Adams. I like the mix. I don't think anybody is just a great player out there, but he's got what I call one of those good Hoosier basketball, Indiana high school basketball teams. I don't know if they can continue to play as many guys throughout the game as these guys mature and get a little bit older. I don't know if they can play that many numbers-wise, but I do like that team. And I think overall, Evansville high school basketball is looking pretty decent.
Yeah, I think I've said that to a couple of people, that this is probably the deepest I've seen Evansville basketball probably in 10 years, the amount of talent, and you look at all the guys that are there. I mean, Simmons is graduating, and I think Scott is graduating for Harrison, but you look at all the juniors and all the sophomores that are coming back. Like you said, Memorial's got a couple of nice young players. Then you got Wrights that has a host of players. They don't just have a couple. They have quite a few, and then you never know who's going to surface, you know, through the competition or through JV, because some of these kids are getting playing time because of the upperclassmen. I mean, you never know who's going to surface. I thought North had a good year. Central played pretty well at points, and Memorial did pretty well. We saw them play against Wrights and some of their younger players. I was really impressed with the way they just competed, you know, and they got out there and really played hard. And like you said, you know, Mike Adams' teams are always going to play hard. So it's kind of exciting. And I think next year, you talked about the crowd a little bit out at North High School. I think next year, when the sectional comes around, when some of these guys, Ernie Duncan's a senior, Jaquan Lyle's a senior, and obviously they're in different classes. But I think the sectionals next year are going to be fun to watch. I really do. And I really think in 3A, Bossy's probably going to be the team to beat again. And then in 4A, it's probably going to be Harrison again. But you never know what happens. You know, a lot of those kids have big hearts, and they want to win their sectional title. And that's one thing that hasn't changed, even with the fact that we're now class basketball instead of not having a class, is that these kids appreciate the value of winning a sectional, and you could obviously tell that if you were at those games.
Well, it has been a good year, and once again, you did a great job of covering the games, and I appreciate you coming on with us. The golden voice of Chris Goodman. Great having you. Have a great weekend, Chris, and maybe we'll be able to talk about some of these Evansville teams in the next round of the tournament.
Thank you. You guys, too. Hopefully they'll go on and win state. But if not, you know, it's always fun watching high school basketball and seeing the state titles regardless of who plays. You just kind of root for kids in general at this point in the season and hope nobody gets injured and everybody has great years.
Yeah, it's a great time of year. Once again, thanks for being with us. Take care of those kiddos. We're going to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Quarterback, go ahead.
Me? Or, yeah, shouldn't we, like, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or...
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Oh! Oh. Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and I'm Joe Milligan, and we're joined by DuBois head basketball coach, Terry Friedman. We've heard from Bar Eve. Well, now we're going to hear from the opponent. Terry, how you doing?
Good. Joe, how are we doing this afternoon?
Great.
Coach, this is Coach K, and we are excited to have you. And congratulations on a big sectional title, and they're all big. Doesn't matter how many you win, they're all big. And congratulations.
Well, they are, Coach, and I appreciate that very much. And thank you for having me on the show. And you know, I just couldn't be happier for our kids. And you know, this is our third one in 5 years here, but I got to tell you, this year is just a little bit more special, and, you know, having a son on the team obviously makes a difference, but this group of kids here has just been kind of special for us.
You know, Coach, you went into that Wood Memorial Sectional, and your team had been playing a little bit better, but you didn't have the year you wanted to have.
Mm-hmm.
You go up against a day school team that's ranked in the state. You knock them off. You play tough basketball. And you go through the rest, and you get that victory. To share that with your son, I know you just mentioned it, but to share that with your son,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it just had to give some great conversations for dad and son.
Well, and you know, Coach, it did. It was really special. Actually, it was a very emotional night for me. And you know, I grew up here playing Jeep basketball, as you know, and my dad was the MVP on the 1952 Jeep basketball team, and my brother's our scorekeeper here. My daughter Abby played on was a 3-year starter for Alan Mottis and his good girls teams there in the 70s, or 2007, 2008 there. And, you know, I guess we're kind of a basketball family is one way to put it, but we're a family first. And, you know, my son, he's the last one of the siblings there, and you know, he said earlier in the year, he said, I got to get something too. He said, everybody else has got something. And, you know, I couldn't be prouder of him. He really stepped up for us in the sectional, averaging double digits there, and scored a career high 15 against Tecumseh. And, you know, I don't want to talk about one player, but it was pretty special there, and it was a great team effort too.
Well, I think it speaks to, for our listeners, both in Indiana and outside of Indiana, it speaks to how important Hoosier hysteria, tradition, basketball in the small towns, in families, it becomes kind of a rite of passage, the opportunity to hand the baton, the opportunity to say, hey, my dad did it, I've done it, my sister did it, I got to do it, grandpa was involved, I was involved. It's really fun when you get together as a family or get together with friends to talk about how you've shared some of the unique experiences together. And it just ties a team, ties a family, ties a father and a son, ties a community together.
Hello?
Coach, are you still with me?
Coach, he dropped, so hopefully he calls back there in a second. He dropped, his call dropped, so we will check and see if we can get him back on the line. But
I got him so emotional about it, we made him nervous. No, we'll get Coach back on the line. That happens when you're doing live net sport talk show, and the way we do it, we work through call-ins, and it's the best way to get our guests involved in the show. So that does happen, but again, we're talking with Coach Terry Friedman of the Northeast Du Bois Jeeps. His team won their sectional, the Wood Memorial Sectional, last weekend, and they're going to be taking on the Barrie Vikings this weekend in the regional. So we're trying to get Terry back so we can finish up that conversation.
I'm here, guys.
Oh, you're back. Okay, Coach, good to have you back. I was just talking about how the experiences and the victories and sons and fathers and grandpas, the community, they get tied together when they're able to share all those experiences over time.
Well, it is, Coach, and I know you come from a basketball family too, so I know you know exactly what we're talking about. And, you know, every year it's a point of passage and rite of passage for the Jeep basketball teams for me to take them through our gym and our hallway here and remind them of Jeep teams of the past. And then also remind them that when you leave here, you leave your own legacy. And your legacy becomes who you were as a high school basketball player. And let's face it, you know, and Du Bois fans are this way. It's not whether you win or lose, I told them. It's how you play the game. You know, if you go out there and you hustle, scrape your knees up, play as a team, whether you win or whether you lose, they're going to love you forever.
I agree with you. It's all about the effort, and eventually the effort gets you standing on that podium winning a championship. Joe, I think you've got a question for Coach.
Yeah, I got a comment and a question. Coach, you know, you talked about tradition showing old teams. You know, you've not mentioned this, but you played on one of the more successful teams tournament-wise that Du Bois had, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Our 77 team, that was actually the first tournament sectional that Northeast Du Bois had ever won. It was our 50th year competing in the IHSAA tournament. And we were that team there. We had Mike Archer, Leon Ware, Bernie Merkel, Greg Weininger, Steve Sander, and myself, six seniors on that team. And we really only played six guys that year. But we were successful enough. We beat Jasper in double overtime in the sectional.
That's very painful, because
I know
a young guy sitting there watching.
Yeah, but we beat Washington Hatchets at the Washington Hatchet House in the regional final, beat Evansville Central in the first game of the semi-state, and lost in the championship game of the semi-state to a very good Terre Haute South team that had a little guard on it by the name of Cam Cameron.
Absolutely, and you know what, Coach, you guys, that team, your team could have just as easily, with a few breaks, been winning that semi-state, moving on. And I was, as much as it hurt to see you beat a Jasper team that my dad was coaching, we barely caught up and enthusiastic about that Du Bois team. What a run, what a time it was for Du Bois and all of Southern Indiana, really.
Well, and I still remember your dad and the sincere, heartfelt congratulations that he gave us. And of course, he was a great coach, and Jasper was a team that, you know, let's face it, a little town like Du Bois, they were on the radar. We wanted to win, and we'd never beaten them until that day, I don't think. You know, but that was a very special time. But you know, it's like 35 years later here, and we're seeing kids today have a chance to enjoy that too, and I think that's what it's all about for us coaches.
Joe, do you have a question?
Yeah. Did we lose Joe?
I don't know where he went. He said he had a question. Well, we'll just go on without him. Coach, you got Bar Eve coming up.
Sure.
One loss. They revenged, got revenge on that loss against Ligoti in the sectional. Mm-hmm. Coach Hughes has just done a tremendous job in Viking land, as I call it, and they have a great storied program. Even before him with Coach Omer and the coaches that have come through there. What thoughts about this Bar Eve team and feelings going into this game?
Well, number one, they're a very familiar opponent with us, Coach, and so we know a lot about them. And, of course, knowing a lot about them doesn't mean we know what to do about them. But, if you look at this Bar Reef team as opposed to some of the Bar Reef teams of the recent past, their post presence, they're a lot bigger, stronger, and more physical in the post than what they have been the last few years. And then when you add that with the fact that I think is probably one of the teams with the highest mental IQ, basketball IQ, we're going to play this year, with good shooting guards that they have, it's kind of a defensive challenge for us we can really take away from this team from their offense. So, we've spent a lot of time this week in practice trying to focus on the things that we think we can take away from this team on Saturday afternoon there. And, I don't think we can take everything away from them, but we think we can take enough away from them that's going to give us a real good chance to win this basketball game.
Coach, how do you approach this with your guys? You played them earlier in the year, and things didn't go your way. How do you approach that with these guys as you prepare them mentally for the weekend?
Well, I'll tell you what we did, Coach. After Saturday night's game, I said, hey, you need to enjoy this. Take Sunday and relax. Monday we're going to talk. And we took Monday off. We didn't practice. But we brought them in, and we sat down for a little skull session, and we just kind of talked about things. We looked at what we did well against them the first time, what's really got to change for us to be successful this weekend here. And, Jay Strawisky, who, is kind of an unsung hero on my basketball team here, he's our point guard who did not play that time. He was still out with that knee injury. He wasn't available that night. We had a couple of guys who were not feeling real well with some flu issues. But, I'm not going to make any excuses. Bar Reef played very well that night on their home court. So we said, look, let's take those things out. Let's say, hey, we're back. I think the key is, and what we told our team was, look how much we have improved. Look how much better we are today than we were on December 21st. And I think that's where we went with it. And right now our kids, I think, are really zeroed in. They're focused in. And I'd be surprised if we don't come out and play well tomorrow.
Well, the exciting thing is that regardless of what happened before, it doesn't matter. Your team has progressed, improved. You've got a guy back. You're going in to play a team that maybe, they have one loss. They avenged their loss. But you are familiar with them. So I think from the standpoint of going into the game, whatever might be a negative, the positive is there that you are familiar with this basketball team you're playing.
Right, exactly. And we know their tradition, but I said, look, we have tradition too, our kids are looking at it from a standpoint that, hey, they said, we're not going to practice all week just to go over there and enjoy being in a regional. We're going over there to win. And I can't ask for any more from that out of my kids. And like I said, we've had a good week of practice. They've stayed very focused. And, we're going to have Jeep Nation behind me. That's all I can say.
Jeep Nation's pretty awesome. Yeah. And Jeep, 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 Jeep. You can hear that. I've heard that in my ring through my ears a few times while I was coaching. And I guess I just have so much respect for the community. It's a great part of Dubois County. And I tell people all the time, I don't care who you played or who you're playing. If you're playing a team from Dubois County, you better be ready to play because they're going to play good basketball and they're going to get after you. Coach, good luck this weekend. I hope that you guys can play to the best of your ability. And if that takes you to the next round, we'll be talking to you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate y'all having me on your show. And thank you. And we're going to see what we can do, and I know this, and we received some really nice compliments from some of the superintendents and officials from the Wood Memorial Sectional about the character and quality of our kids. I can assure your listeners that Northeast Du Bois kids will represent our community with character, hustle, and teamwork. And, you know, and I've always told them, when we walk off that court, let's have no regrets about how we performed or about how we played. And we have that, we'll have that same feeling, I hope, tomorrow afternoon when we walk off that court.
Yeah, well, Coach, that's a great approach, and that's why you do a great job, and the Jeeps continue to be successful. Again, good luck.
Okay.
We're going to go to break, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Coach, thank you.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I gotta work on my game.
No, no, no. Don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. And, Coach, we we'll have Donnie Schulteis calling in. Actually, he is on. I'm going to put him on the line. But then also I'm going to read our newest Facebook posting about Netgate, okay?
okay, Joe.
Netgate. Yes, he is with us. This is from Kevin. I'll go ahead and out him. I won't say his last name, but he's one of the greatest running backs Jasper's ever had. Okay, Jasper High School. And it said,
I'm sure that gave it away.
I wouldn't have done it, not from a Kentucky perspective, but because of the message it sends to your kids. IU and UK should not be shooting for conference championships. That is a given. The goal every year should be to win a national championship. Losing should hurt, and I wouldn't have felt right cutting down the nets after a loss.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I don't disagree with Kevin, and I kind of, and this will irritate a few people. Please call in or text us. You can text Coach K at 812-480-9449, but I would agree, and I am tired of hearing IU fans, and I'm one, talking about, well, look where we've come from. Folks, 5 national championships, numerous conference championships, don't give me that where we've come from. We had a few years where we were down. Other programs have. Kentucky's had it. Other teams have had it. It's not about where we were. It's where we are. You know, we've done enough in the past as the Hoosier basketball success. I'm not buying that. Well, look where we were. I don't buy that. I call that a bump in the road, a hiccup. We are Indiana. We are basketball. We are 5 national championships. 93 was the last time we shared or won one outright. I don't care. Winning the Big Ten Conference is important, but it's not as important as competing at a high level, top 20, and doing well in the NCAA tournament. That said, we'll save a little bit more of this discussion for the rant. Right now, we've got our Indy correspondent, contributor, Don Schulteis, and we're going to talk some Indianapolis regionals. The fireworks went on up there at the sectional. Cathedral comes out on top in 4A. We got some other outstanding teams moving forward. Don, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me back, and yeah, there's no doubt about it. Hoosier hysteria is in full gear up here in Indianapolis, and last weekend we saw some great championships. As you mentioned, Cathedral beat Indianapolis Tech, and I will admit Trey Lyles did not play the night before. He evidently tweaked his knee. His father and his father's the assistant coach for Tech, and the head coach, John Delaney, had kept him out, thinking that there might have been some structural damage. The good news was that there was no structural damage, as they found out on Monday. but he did not play in the game. Cathedral won by 16. It was a hard-fought game until one Jalen Coleman, who I just read today is ranked in the top 35 of his class. He's a sophomore for Cathedral. He's ranked in the top 35 nationally in his recruiting class. He went on a tear, 8 points in a row, a couple minutes into the third quarter and just broke the game open. And Colin Hartman played extremely good game that night as well. He had 16 points, 9 rebounds. And Cathedral just played better than Tech without Trey Lyles. I will tell you that, you know, in my opinion, if I would have been Trey Lyles or the coach, I would have got him into the doctor Saturday morning and found out what was going on. To me, boy, it would have been tough for me to sit out of that game. Supposedly, he cried like a baby afterwards with his teammates. But they've got 6 out of 7 of their top scorers returning for next year. So they should be the number one team in the state and probably the top contender in 4A with all that horsepower back. But let me give you a little rumor mill, too, on Trey. There is a rumor going around Indy that he might be going up to La Lemure prep school for his senior year so that he can play a more national schedule as opposed to state of Indiana. So we'll have to see if there's any truth to that or if it's maybe the competition, just hoping that he might make that move. In other sectional, go ahead.
Don, let me jump in just real quickly. I would agree with you on getting him into the doctor on Saturday, especially if you're playing for a championship, especially in Indianapolis where sports medicine doctors are everywhere and some of the best in the Midwest for sure, if not in the country. So that is kind of surprising, and I appreciate you giving us that information because I thought that he was kept out because they thought, you know, that they professionally maybe thought there was something, but that's interesting that they hadn't. The second thing would be on this La Lemure deal, you know, I think Trey Lyles and his Tech team play such a good schedule, such a quality schedule in the Indianapolis area. I do not see how going to that prep school is that much of a benefit. I think we know some other players that went to that prep school, and I don't see them, you know, knocking down the doors in college basketball this year, but just my thought.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, Cathedral did play La Lemure during the season. Cathedral came out on top. This was just a couple of weeks ago, and they are a very good team, I will say. They went out, I was told, and played in a major national tournament over Christmas and finished third. So they're playing some of the top teams. But, boy, John Delaney at Tech does an outstanding job as a coach. He you know, Trey has an exceptional team around him. And it just seems like, you know, just for his benefit and the future of being able to have the memories that he could put together, maybe possibility of winning a state championship, you got to be a little lucky and you got to stay healthy and all of that kind of stuff. But I find it hard to believe. But, hey, in today's day and age with all these people whispering in the ears of dad and mom and kid and everything else in between, who knows what will happen. You know, some people say that some of the bigger programs, the Dukes and Kentuckys, and they want you to play a more national schedule. But, hey, Trey Lyles is for real, and wherever he decides to go, they're going to take him. So,
Don, I'd have to agree, and I think it's baloney to the listeners out there. If you could play, and you, especially if you're playing in the Indianapolis area, you're playing good competition, that's a bunch of baloney. You want to get better, work on your game in the off time, and that's not necessarily playing AAU and everything. That means working on your individual skills. You'll get enough competition to make it bigger. Hey, Don, the other thing I might want to mention, but give Cathedral some kudos, this was their first sectional championship since the 90s?
Yeah, since 1998, Coach. 15 years, Cathedral. Pedro has not been able to cut the nets down. It was a big step for Andy Fagan's program. He's in his third year. They've won a lot of games under his leadership, but they, until this year, have not been able to get out of the sectional. And they've had a lot of adversity. And I know you and I have talked and jabbed each other back and forth, but for what they've been through with Colin Hartman getting hurt twice in the first half of the year, and then they had some discipline problems with a couple of their two starters. They're down two starters on this team and continue to win. They've put together now 16 in a row, and it's as you know as a coach, that kind of adversity can either rip a team apart or the kids will galvanize and come together, and it appears that, that Cathedral's done the latter. And I have to give them a lot of respect for the ability to be that mentally tough and been able to take care of their business so far. Now, they're in the Southport Regional this weekend. They play a Pendleton Heights team that's 14-9 in the first game at 10 a.m., Martinsville, that's 12-9, plays Pike. Indianapolis Pike is one of the top teams up here. They're 21-3. I think it's going to be Cathedral and Pike in the championship. And as Kyle Needenrip, who's been a former guest of yours, writes for the Star, he's picked Cathedral in a toss-up. You know, I think either team can win that. My allegiance goes to Cathedral because my son goes there, but it's going to be an exciting championship if both teams can take care of their business in the first round games.
Don, speaking of regionals up in that area, a couple other teams that might be of note that have moved on from sectional rounds up in the Indianapolis area, anybody that sticks out that you think has a great shot at making a run, whether it be in 4A, 3A, 2A, 1A?
Absolutely. In 4A, maybe the best team still in the state is Carmel. Carmel came out of their own sectional last weekend by really just beating the heck out of a very good North Central team. And they're going to go on to the Marion Regional, where Fort Wayne Northrop, who's 18-7, will play New Haven in the first game. Big Joe will like the fact that Bryson Scott will be showcased in this regional. He plays for Fort Wayne Northrop, and read today that he scored over 2,000 points in his high school career. Him and his twin brother, Brayton, who's going to Indiana State. Bryson is going to Purdue. That's why I bring it up for Joe's for Joe to hear.
What are the few bright spots for Joe?
Yeah, his twin brother has scored over 1,500 points. So those two will be leading Northrop. And then in the second game, Carmel, who's 20-2, which arguably, in my opinion, could be the best team in the state right now just because of the way they're playing. They're playing a very good Kokomo Wildcats, and Wildcats is spelled with a K in their case. Kokomo is 21-2, so that's going to be an exciting first-round game, and I suspect Fort Wayne Northrop in Carmel in the final. Now, stepping down to 3A, and I shouldn't say stepping down, but moving to 3A, Mount Vernon, who's 22-1, and this is not Posey County Mount Vernon. This is Fortville area up here in central Indiana, Mount Vernon. They're 22-1. I think they're ranked number one in the state in 3A. They'll be going against Danville and then the Frankfurt. I think they're still called the Frankfurters, aren't they?
Frankies, yeah.
Edgewood.
Got a great gym, too.
Mount Vernon should come out of that, but that's the team you should be watching because I suspect that possibly Bossy will be ending up playing Mount Vernon in the semi-state to find out who goes into the state championship game. So they're very good. Their girls team won the state championship over the weekend, so they didn't play their final game till Monday night, and they took Arlington out with no trouble, Indianapolis Arlington, and I suspect they're going to come out of this regional fairly easier. Now, one thing to mention in 2A, and I know Park Tudor's been a pain in Forest Park's side a couple of different times over the last few years, but they got upset last weekend by Broad Ripple. And it's just interesting, Scott Hicks, who coaches Broad Ripple, had spent 10 years at Cathedral, had a great record, but could never win the sectional. He moved over to Broad Ripple, and he's won his first sectional. He upset Park Tudor a couple of weeks ago during the season, and I thought there was no way they were going to be able to take Trevon Blewett out again, but they were able to do it, and Broad Ripple's in the Connersville Regional with Speedway versus Cecina in the first game, Union County versus Broad Ripple, and I suspect that Speedway and Broad Ripple will play for the championship. And given what Broad Ripple's been doing the last several weeks, I'll give the nudge to them.
Well, you know, Park Tudor getting upset, that is big news, and especially with what a program they've had now. Whether that's recruiting or not, I don't know, but we won't go there. Don, great stuff on the Indianapolis area. I can't wait to see how these regional rounds come out and where we go. But you're not going anywhere. You're not going anywhere right now because we're getting ready to start the rant. And, you know, we've been talking about, as Joe has named it, Netgate, IU cutting down the nets after the loss to Ohio State to celebrate a co- or share championship of not a conference tournament, but the Big Ten Conference. And whether right or wrong or what your opinion is, we'll talk a little bit about that. And we're also going to bring into the fold, Don, our good friend, WBDC Sports Director, Kurt Gooksell. And we want to remind people, at noon, our show goes off the air live, but if you hang on and catch us a little bit later, you can get our podcast, which has the complete show, not only the live portion, but what we do after. And folks, want to, again, thank all our listeners, not for just from Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, but all over the place. I got a text just a few minutes ago from somebody from Missouri asking me my thoughts on the Missouri Tigers. They better keep working because they got a tough road to go. But we've had over 6,000 listeners, getting close to 7,000 listeners on our show last week, and we'll see if we can continue to do what needs to be done to keep our listeners coming. But, Don, here we go into the rant. Joe, add Kurt Gooksell on. And, Joe, why don't you start it out with Netgate?
Okay.
Okay, let's start the rant. It's time. We've added Kurt Gooksell, WBDC DC Broadcasting Sports Director. We've got Indy Hoops correspondent Don Schulteis, and of course Coach K. And I do want to correct one thing before we get started on the rant. In the real world, meaning the Eastern time zone, our show gets over at 1, not noon.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Coach right. K. Eastern time zone.
Coach
is...
K is in the you're in the wrong time zone. Remember.
Thanks, Joe. Way to start the rant. And let me remind our listeners and anyone new to the show. When the rant starts, anything goes. If somebody wants to get mad, they can get mad. If you want to call in or you want to text us, my text is 812-480-9449 for Coach K. And I did get a text from Jacob, and Jacob says, and guys, I'm going to throw this out to you, and we can start with Kurt and jump over to Don and go from there before we really hit Netgate hard. Do you think IU bounces back in Ann Arbor on Sunday? Seems like they are in a rut at the wrong time. What do we think the keys to victory are? This is from Jacob in Jasper. Guys, before we hit Netgate, and I want your real opinions when we do, but what about the Hoosiers? Do they bounce back in Ann Arbor? A big game, over 120 media credentials have been asked for. Kurt, what about the Hoosiers in Ann Arbor?
Good afternoon, boys. Yes, a big game Sunday in Ann Arbor for the Hoosiers, and history tells me that they'll get ready to play this game after going to Michigan State and winning, going to Ohio State and winning. Seems like they play awfully well in those big road games against big-time team. So hopefully for you Indiana fans, they will bounce back.
Don?
I agree, Kurt. Kurt, I agree with that. I think that there's one thing about this team. They do step up during the big games. I think this last loss against Ohio State was a bit emotional, being senior night. Probably 4 out of the 5 starters will not be playing in Assembly Hall next year, in my opinion. And I just think that, the way Victor Oladipo played in the first half was kind of indicative of the extra, I don't know, emotion or whatever it was that they were feeling. But I think they're going to step up. Keys, I think it's guard the perimeter shot. Don't let them get on a roll with the threes and make them beat you inside, because, Coach K, I agree with you. I think their inside game is suspect, and I think that's where you can really exploit some weakness and win the game.
Yeah, I would add that to the keys. There are several, but I think Indiana has to establish an inside game, make sure it's known both on the offensive end, yes, but also the defensive end. You can establish an inside game on both ends of the court, and that means you're not letting their dribble penetration get to the basket easily. They may try to post up, but guys, if we play physical, they won't try to post up very long because they don't have a post-up game. As far as guarding the perimeter, Don is absolutely correct. Guard that perimeter, and if history repeats itself, and it probably will, Michigan, instead of trying to move the basketball with the pass and find a two-man game in the low post, will just scoot 5 feet further out and try to shoot a longer three-point shot, and that's when we're going to have the advantage. We got to be ready to get up and down the floor with the ball. Oladipo's got to come to play. He's just got to come to play, and will she? He's got to come to pass the ball once in a while. Ouch.
Don't even play the game. Just don't even play the game. You've got it all figured out.
All right, let's go to Joe's.
I like it.
Let's go to Joe's favorite subject, Netgate.
Actually, it's not my favorite subject. I just read that the conclave starts for the new Pope on March 12th, 2013. So that is my new favorite subject.
2 days, 3 days, you've been all over me about IU cutting down the nets. You got this little laughing snippet that you keep pressing.
I don't need
it. You're ready? Come on. Put it out there, and let's talk Netgate.
Well, let me give you my opinion on that, Coach. From my perspective, I set the game off with about a minute 50 seconds to go because I was fairly disgusted with the way we were finishing up. So in my opinion, I would not have cut the nets down. I think that it's very anticlimactic to do something like that on a night where you lose. Maybe I would have had the option of doing that if we would have won, but it's one thing to celebrate the Big Ten co-championship, but you're almost saying that we've done what we wanted to do there, and by cutting those nets down, I think I would have saved it for something bigger, which is an outright Big Ten championship, and hopefully something big in the tournament. But that's my view. Tom Crean's going to do what he wanted. He obviously did. But I would not have cut the nets down.
When the heck did you start cutting the nets down for conference championships in the first place? Well, I thought you just put a banner down. And you know what? Senior night? I'm good with senior night. Those guys deserve a great senior night. But what the heck was it? I thought it was shameless self-promotion, inappropriate. Kurt, you can lambast me if you want. And this isn't Bob Knight stuff. This is just IU stuff. It's just not necessary. It's not who we are.
Yeah, I didn't go fully for the cutting down of the nets. And again, that's what the players wanted to do. That's what Crean wanted to do. We all know how Crean is. He's great at all, like you said, the self-promotion. And there's got to be an angle for him to do that, and there must be a reason, so he did. And I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, he can do whatever he wants. It's his program, and you know, we need to get on with it, but I probably wouldn't be cutting down the nets.
Kurt, why is IU, and this is, I know that you're in the radio and the game, I mean, I really have to ask this question. IU has a big game like Ohio State, okay? And it is a big game. Now, we throttled Ohio State at Ohio State, but this is a big game. There's conference championship implications on the line. It's senior night. Why is IU playing the 9 o'clock game on ESPN? I mean, seriously, why is IU got the 9 o'clock slot for that game?
Probably because they feel it's the better game. As late as you go being in media, the better it supposedly is, because they're not like you and I that like to go to bed like at 8 o'clock. Most people like to stay up later, and I guess that's why they put that game into prime time, just like they put Michigan State and Wisconsin into prime time. And they flip-flop those all the time. Oh, well, we played Indiana played earlier in the season at 7. It just goes back and forth.
It's senior night, and they know that all these things are going to go on. IU knows.
But that's not IU's decision. That's ESPN's call. And if you're going to take those millions of dollars that they're going to give you, you play at 2 in the morning or you play at 9 in the evening. It doesn't matter.
Well,
yeah, we know that any time IU can be on TV, Coach Crean says, let's do it. He doesn't care if it's midnight or 7.
IU can be on TV anytime they want. And plus, they don't have any scholarships left because they got more players than scholarships.
It's not Indiana's call. It's not Indiana's call. Once that schedule goes out, it's not their call.
Well, they should have some call. He says, this is a college. This isn't pro. This is college. And people are coming in from 3 hours away, and then the shenanigans go on afterwards.
Not to mention it was a terrible night as far as snow and ice and stuff up there.
ESPN changes game times all the time.
But that's when ESPN wanted to play it. That's why Indiana, Purdue, in college football, you think they want to play 11 o'clock games? They could care less about the TV people, and the league could care less about your specific attendance. It's when they want to put
the
games on.
It's time for the Hoosier Network, I guess.
that would be fine. But that's what that whole deal was. My thing was, as a network like ESPN, Missouri's throttling Arkansas by 30 points. It's not a nail-biter. I don't think a person from Missouri is going to object if you cut away in the last minute and a half of that game.
I agree.
And basically, as it always happens, there's a foul. Then there's a fight. Then this guy is going to walk to the free throw line. Then Mike Anderson's going to call a timeout as his team's getting beat 30 by Frank Hastings. And, you know, invariably, it happens all the time. And I predict it every morning when Indiana's got the 9 o'clock game or Michigan State or whatever, like last night. It's going to be a circus at the end of that first game, and that's what happened.
Kurt, what was your classic post on Facebook when you were watching that game? I can't remember word for word, but you had a classic post.
Yeah, I would like the JV game to end.
Yeah, the game.
Speaking of classic statements, is it true, Kurt, that Thad Mata woke up on third base after that IU game?
Well, there again, everybody jumped on, and Tom Crean got outcoached. So okay, did he outcoach Mata back in Columbus? And I guess he outcoached Izzo twice against Michigan State. No, he didn't. Their players play better on those specific nights.
I don't think Ohio State staff outcoached the IU staff in that game. I thought it was just a true lack. I don't know. You know, sometimes as a coach, guys, your teams just don't come ready. They, for whatever reason, they think they're ready. They thought they were ready. They thought they prepared to be ready. They just don't come. They don't click. Individuals just don't get it done. IU just didn't, and Ohio State took advantage of that. Even as bad as we throttled them in Columbus, Ohio State was tough enough mentally to come into Bloomington and take advantage of IU for whatever reason wasn't ready to play good basketball.
I don't know where Oladipo was.
I don't know. You know, guys, let me ask you this, and we'll start with you, Don. Oladipo gets those fouls. He's out of the game and really plays very little, never gets on any kind of I don't want to say a run, but gets himself out there and gets into the flow of the game. Is there sometimes appropriate to just go ahead and say, you know, you're a veteran player, you're a leader, you're going to play with two fouls as long as you can in this first half?
Well, I don't think in the first half, Coach. I mean, we only were down two at halftime. I know we gave up a bit of a lead. I think we're up five or so. But, you know, other people have to step up. I thought Yogi Ferrell, for as much as he gets the accolades as a freshman, he's done a really good job this year. I thought Aaron Kraft just ate his lunch. You know, I think offensively, cuts to the basket, they were looking for the mismatch of Aaron Kraft and Yogi Ferrell, and they found it several times. And he just kept, every time we wanted to make a run or looked like we might be able to put something together, it was crafty Kraft that gets it done, and he was the MVP of that game.
Yeah, he played tough. Kurt, I'm a little concerned. Now, I think that you can come back against Michigan and play a great game, and all is forgiven, and we're all going forward, especially a Michigan team that couldn't beat Penn State. But we're seeing a lot of inconsistency on Cody Zeller. Do you have any concerns with that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I just think some of this time, guys, just for whatever reason, like you mentioned Oladipo and some of those guys, maybe you just don't play well on a certain night. I don't worry about Cody Zeller. I mean, sometimes he's inconsistent. I understand that. But, again, he's a seven-footer battling every night. But it's a lot better. I feel a lot better now that Indiana's good than when they were bad. I just don't worry about stuff like that. So I don't know.
Is it safe to say that maybe this team is – I don't want to say looking past, but maybe this team has gone through this part of the season and now they're moving into another mode, the March Madness NCAA mode, maybe a little sooner than they should have, and maybe having this Michigan game as the last game of the regular season anyway, maybe this is a great game to get these guys and keep them focused as we start to move into the tournament period of basketball. I mean, if when you look at this team, Kurt, do you have a concern? What is there something, or do we make too much of a team that's only lost four or five games? Hey, that's the way it is every season for people. But are is there something more here?
Well, I can see where you're coming from, and I think it's a thing where they're playing really good teams every night, and sometimes the other team gets the best of you. I think this Michigan game is in a good place, and if the Big Ten is as good as everybody's telling us it is, they've been able to go through it and be a champion or a co-champion, then everything might work out if they stay completely focused on this Michigan game. Then you get into a situation, you don't have to play on anybody's home court the rest of the season. And I know people say, well, you don't get to play at Assembly Hall. Indiana's always good at Assembly Hall, this, that, and the other. But you know what? Now they don't have to play on somebody else's home court for the rest of the season. So maybe that adds a spark. And maybe you get away from everybody knowing the set you're going to run before you even call it out, or the inbound play that you're going to run, or the defense you're going to employ. Maybe that'll help getting away from some of this, and maybe we'll find out that Indiana is head and shoulders above everybody else. And, you know, that's what I'm looking forward. Maybe I'm just tired of the, you know, the battles every night in the Big Ten, and I'm tired, but, you know, I'm just used to it, and I'm, like, dull to it, and looking forward to the upcoming Big Ten tournament, and even more so the NCAA tournament.
Don, Duke has Kelly back. The Duke Blue Devils have Kelly back. First game out, he scores 35 points. They beat Miami at Duke. Is Duke now, I mean, when you look at it, they went through their period without him. They weren't near as good a team. Is IU as good as Duke? Is Duke now on par with IU? What are your thoughts about the Duke Blue Devils as we go towards tournament time?
I don't think they're head and shoulders above anybody. I think that there's probably 3 to 5 teams that could be number one at any given time, and I think it's going to be who catches the mojo going through their conference tournament and into the NCAA tournament. And so there's no doubt that Duke is a much better team with Kelly. He's hard. He could take you inside. He could take you inside. He could take you outside. So it gives them a heck of a lot more weaponry, but at the same time, I think they're vulnerable. I think they're beatable, and I don't think they're going to dominate.
Well, I really hope that the Michigan game has the centered focusness for the Hoosiers. I got to be honest with you guys. I am not near as concerned about the funk. If we don't play well at Michigan, I'm going to get a little more nervous. But is Big Ten tournament anticlimactic? Does IU have the number one seed or a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, Kurt? Does IU have a number one seed?
I think they do. I think they, when you crunch all the numbers and see where you beat people and who you beat, I think if they have a flame out in the first round of Big Ten tournament, maybe not get the number one seed. But I think when you look at everybody else, as Donnie said, everybody else has got their flaws too, even Duke and Florida and some of those teams, Gonzaga. I think they are a number one team.
I'm going to switch real quick here, Don. I got to tell you something. This is going to blow you guys away. I cannot believe that anybody is questioning that Kentucky not be in the tournament. I think they should be in the tournament. I think they played a good enough schedule. I know they've lost some games, but I think they're good enough to be an at-large team in the tournament.
Are you asking my opinion of that?
Yeah, I'm throwing it out there.
I think that if there's any year since Cal's been there that a Kentucky team would not be in the tournament, it might be this year, quite frankly. I think when they lost a big center, I think their team is – I think they're a decent team. I don't think they're a Kentucky team, and I don't – you know, are they one of the top 64? Probably. But depending on, you know, and I guess a weak SEC conference are probably going to get in. But, you know, they're not of the caliber that they've been in the past. They're not a favorite of mine to even reach the Sweet 16. I think they get beat in the second round if they get in.
How many Big Ten teams go past one round?
Four.
How many get in? What do you think? Seven?
I mean, they're talking seven.
Who's the last Big Ten team in your opinion, Kurt?
Probably Minnesota.
Donnie?
Or
the last team that gets in?
For the Big Ten.
I'd agree with Kurt. I think Minnesota gets in.
Do you think there's a chance Minnesota doesn't get in, or do you just think they're the last team in and it's automatic?
Oh, I think they're a type of team that's in. I think they're a type of team that's in. And I don't know how it's going to – it's all depending on matchups, who they play. On paper, none of the Big Ten teams are going to lose in the first round. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not going to be in these 8-9 games or, you know, these 7-10s. But – you know how the NCAA tournament goes. I mean, I can't wait to fill out the bracket, but I know there's going to be some red on that bracket after the first day of activity. So that's a hard question, Coach.
Well, you
well,
know,
let's
it
put
is
it around
a hard...
you, Coach. You tell us what your opinion is.
Well, I don't know that I'm sold on Minnesota. I haven't been all year. I do know they beat IU at Minnesota, and I thought that was a great win, but I struggle with some of these teams that can just come out and not be able to win games that they're supposed to win, and we're supposed to believe because they're in the Big Ten Conference, they're a top 64 team. I've been saying all year that Michigan is not a top 5, 6, 7 team. Everybody says they are. You can't get beat by Penn State and say you're a top 4, 5, 6 team. I don't care what you say.
Nope.
You just can't do that, and
that's
why I think it's ridiculous. I mean, Illinois worked its way in with a victory over Indiana and then a couple more wins, but Iowa beat them the other night. Should Iowa get in? Most people say no.
No.
Who's going to get in? If the Big Ten gets seven in, Iowa has to get in. Well, I guess they're on the bubble with Minnesota, right?
The bubble. Does Wisconsin get in?
The way they played lately, I'm not so sure their stock is near what it should be.
But they're in.
I jumped on Bo Ryan's bandwagon there when they started putting it together. But the way they played the last couple weeks, it's scary. Now, how much should the tournament, the Big Ten tournament, matter? Guys, I throw that out there seriously because I don't know. How much should the Big Ten tournament matter for the team that doesn't win it?
I think the bottom, you know, three or four teams that we're talking about in that NCAA tournament ranking there from the Big Ten, I think it's important that they win one or two games because some of those bottom teams, your Illinois, your Minnesota, your Wisconsin, claim out, that's a cause for concern. But, you know, if Indiana goes out, it's a cause for concern for us, obviously, as fans. But it's not in the grand scheme of things. I don't think it's a problem for those top-tier teams. Because then you just go back and reload and get ready for the NCAA tournament. Some people think that's the best
way to handle
it. I agree
with that. Like a nice little run by Iowa, Minnesota will ensure that they get in. You know, Iowa, if they get something going in a game or two, you might see eight teams in the Big Ten get in there. I mean, they're 8-9 right now.
I hope we can get Jerry Palm, CBS.com bracketologist. I hope we can get him on next week because I really would like to ask him from his standpoint, the expert standpoint, how this tournament matters if you don't win it. I mean, does an Iowa getting to the final game get them in? Does IU getting beat in the first round knock them out of a one seed if they don't win at Michigan? I just wonder about some of that stuff, but excuse me, it'll all start to play out going forward. Guys, let me take you just quickly to high school basketball. You know, we've talked about it a lot of the show. Vincennes beat Jasper the other night at Washington. We all got a connection to Jasper. Jasper scores 25 points. Was that surprising to either one of you? Don?
25 points? Well, heck yeah, it's surprising. How can you win a sectional championship game by scoring 25 points? I mean, I don't know what happens. I mean, I know Vincennes is a decent team, but they weren't state-ranked, lights-out type of team. In fact, two to four of their starters hadn't even played the last couple of games. And
I think
they played that kind of
out. Didn't even play.
They play that kind of lockdown defense on Jasper, or does Jasper just feel so much pressure that they can't fill it up? I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen Jasper, especially this new year. I saw them early in the year, and, you know, their physical team and all of that, but I would have thought they would have at least scored between 40 and 50 points. And so I'm disappointed, I'll have to say. I was really disappointed. I want them to win, especially over Vincennes, but you can't win if you score 25 points. Kurt?
Well, it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. And there's something fundamentally wrong when you can't go over there and get ready to play and put up 25 points. It's from top to bottom, it's unbelievable how this can keep on happening. And It just makes you shake your head. I've seen Vincennes, I've seen Jasper, and I don't know what in the world could have happened, you know, in leading up in that preparation, whatnot, to have a ball game like that. And it's very, very disappointing. And it's
I'm not criticizing any individual players of Jasper because we respect what they have to put out. But it is just surprising that you work that hard to get into a championship game and you score 80 points in overtime against Heritage Hills, who was a pretty darn good team, at least from that standpoint of that sectional, and you can't muster but 25 points. So I don't know. You know, things could get a lot tougher, Kurt. Jasper's on the bubble line there for enrollment. They could be going to 4A next year and coming down to probably Evansville North.
Well, if you think there's not any enthusiasm for what's going on with that program now, if they have to, and in all the sports, if they have to shuffle down there because they're not going to make all those teams come up here for tournament games and the baseball, basketball, whatever, then that might be the end of that program or some of these other programs, because, I mean, that's not going to be a good situation. Maybe they can move it around. I don't know, with the certain group of 4A schools, I don't know what they can do to make it more appealing, because Jasper's going to be kind of like the standalone. You know, they'd be a standalone if they went to the New Albany, Jeffersonville area. They're going to be a standalone if they go the other way. And anyway,
yeah, it would make it tough to rationalize that five teams would drive an hour for one. And Don, when you I think the IHSA is made a big mistake in some of these realignments. I know they're forced to, but I think they got to be careful, because they're taking some of their stronger tournament sites and attendance sites and possibly hurting their overall financial situation. And Don, you know, I just don't see Jasper getting a sectional and five Evansville teams driving to Jasper. I see Jasper either going towards New Albany or Evansville.
I agree with that. I don't think that there's any way you can rationalize Jasper hosting when you've got a facility like Evansville North that's just been recently built as well. And that's the obvious one that Jasper would travel to. Why would they take them all the way over to New Albany or that direction? That's a much, much longer drive and
you know what
more
you're saying,
painful.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, it's the baseball deal. Jasper, you think they're going to get a host at Rooks or Field, a place they probably should host, but because they're the only team up here, they're likely to go down to Evansville and participate, and that would be sad. I mean, Jasper's going to have a nice gym.
You know what will happen in baseball, and it might happen in basketball. You might end up having Jasper host and not even play. I mean, I look at Martinsville this week. They're hosting a regional for a lower
class. That'll never happen. Yeah, that'll never happen, because the people that take care of the baseball fields, no matter if it's Jasper or anybody else, they're the coaches and teams themselves. And they're kind of like, you know, a Bedford deal and the girls, where they, you know, they were going to play on their home court because their administrators were going to have to work, their ticket takers were going to have to work, and they wouldn't ship them someplace else and make people stay back and work. That's the only thing with that whole deal, you know. But I think as you go along in these tournaments, when your team's out, it's a situation they can do that like they do at Martinsville. But, I mean, I don't see how that they think all this is good, guys. You follow this stuff more than anybody does. And when you can't have same rivalries year after year, when you're splitting it up every 2 years, and like Kenny said, when they moved Southridge up to 3A, they took a great site and made them go into Washington and then Washington come here. They alternated. But every other year, one of those great gyms – nobody was in it. Well, they could have moved it around and let some, you know, and not just because they host the good tournaments. That's where the people flock to come to these games. They'll go to these gyms, and it's a better experience. And they just cut a certain population out every time they move these sites around and let a gym or a field or, you know, a course be sitting by itself when there's no action there. It's an emotional tie, guys,
that is developed over generations. And Kurt, you just hit a major point. For some people, it doesn't matter whether their team's in it or not. They like going to that particular site. They like how the tournaments run. They like the community. And that's why they go. It's something that's familiar. And when you jostle these teams around, when you move them all over and you break those emotional ties, you are costing yourself what I call another generation of fans that you will not get back. It only takes 3 to 5 years to lose a generation of fans. We've seen that. So, Bobby Cox, listen, I don't know who you got making decisions, impartial, partial or not, but you need to start thinking about how well the tournament sites are run, which Jasper does a great job in baseball, absolutely tremendous job in baseball. The facilities, and you need to think about the generational emotional ties, because those are the people that are going to put money in your boxes. And if you're losing the young people and you're losing the older people, boy, there's not much left. It'll look like the Indianapolis Pike Ben Davis crowd the other night for their sectional final, Don.
yeah, it was a little bit disappointing in that. But maybe Jasper will be saved by the success rule this year. You know, if they're on the bubble and a team or two move up, maybe that'll be enough to keep them down. You know what I mean? So maybe they'll be able to survive this cut. But it sounded like Andy Novlett last week, or yeah, it was last week, he said that the school was getting bigger and the next four or five classes were big, and so it sounds like enrollments even get going higher.
Well, if they do that, it is going higher. Then they need to take a look at how to group these teams better. If they, you know, don't make two mistakes. Not that enrollment's getting better, bigger is a mistake. That's just the way it's going to be. But group these teams, group them where people can still enjoy it and still get something out of it. Kenny, last week, there were so many Jasper people at the Southridge Sectional in 2A, and you look at them and you go, why aren't you at Washington watching Jasper, your team that you usually follow? They don't consider that over there at Washington, the Sectional. There's a whole group of people, just to talk about what you mentioned earlier, that's part of the problem, where they don't embrace that Washington section or Jasper's over there, and thus the crowds are down with the Jasper program. It's amazing, and it just I could, you know how I am on all that stuff.
I think it's valid, and I really worry that the people in Indianapolis making these decisions, they're getting input, and then some of these principals that are giving them input don't want to make the hierarchy mad because they might get a chance to be on the board at some point, that they're not getting the truth out there. The small schools wrestled away the basketball tournament the way it was and created the class tournament. But now we're into a new situation with this success rule, which is ridiculous. It penalizes schools and it penalizes young people. This is what really gets me. It penalizes the young people that had nothing to do possibly with the success of the team before them. They're just coming up. And all of a sudden, they get penalized by a rule that's known as the success rule. Again, it jostles people into another class. They have no common traditions. And another group, another generation of fans are lost. It's ridiculous. And in their effort to be politically correct, they are being... it's almost as if they're going against the people they're trying to protect by hurting the tournament and leaving nothing for future generations.
Yeah, and it's because they don't want to tackle the public-private debate, whether it's right, whether it's wrong. They don't want to have anything to do with that, so they come up with some of the stuff that the success factor. And I'm a proponent of not bumping something. Everybody thinks that the settle the football, with the PP or that in basketball, whatever. You say private schools, parochial schools, you play in the largest class. You go all the way to the top, and that'll stop some of it, and it'll make it a little better. Because Fort Wayne Lures in football, they could play in the 5A class. Modern Day runs 110 guys out there for a 2A football game. Against a 2A school like Southridge, who's very good in football, that have 45. Bump them up to the largest class and see if
I don't know about that. I mean, Kurt, I mean, Modern Day runs 110 out there because they built an incredible tradition in football, and everybody that goes there wants to be a part of it. Southridge doesn't have that kind of tradition yet.
I understand that, I don't even like when they talk about the recruiting talk, because that has nothing to do with it. Because those kids from Modern Day or Memorial or Chautauqua Cathedral, they go there because they want to get a good education, and those are good kids, and they're all going there for a purpose. It's not just to play sports, which a lot of people that go off top saying that's why they go to this, and this coach is getting this guy to go here and ever. But that's just the way it goes, though. They still put all those players out there. We always talk about here at Jasper or when Southridge is playing in football. You drop 60 kids out of an airplane at Southridge's practice field, and if you got 10 players that could play out of those 60, how much better you could be.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And again, I hate the recruiting talk because I don't believe any of that. Because those schools, those are great schools. I have nothing but respect for those schools as far as what they do in the educational process and everything else. But sometimes it's just not, and I'm not one to say this isn't fair, that's not fair. It's just the facts. When you're talking about that, those kind of numbers, you know, some of those schools, they hardly have any disciplinary problems where a segment of portions of the school, at these public schools sometimes, they have to deal with this. All those kids at those other schools are there because they want to be there. They participate in band, in baseball, in football, and academic stuff. I'm not getting it across the way I want to, but it's just a different playing field and a different level. That there's got to be a better way to figure this all out. And those people up at Indy are obviously can do this if they really put their mind to it. But it just doesn't seem like they are, you know, going through it and talking to people and throwing out the things that we're throwing out here.
Well, you know, here's one thing that bothers me. First of all, I think the success rule is discriminatory. And I think some attorney and somebody's going to take this on at some point. I think it's ridiculous.
Well,
the second thing that I've got a problem with is that I don't think they think this out as much as they should. I think they listen to too many individual liberal voices on, you know, I'm in school, my son's in school now, right now, or I'm here right now, and I want my team to win. Let's do this. But the bottom line is, in life, sometimes you give your very best effort. Donnie, sometimes you give your very best effort, and you give everything you've got, and for reasons we don't always understand, it's not enough. But that doesn't mean you failed. That does not mean you failed. And those are the great life lessons that you learn through athletics. But this is ridiculous. Jasper Baseball's field is outstanding. They run a great tournament. They've got a great program. Southridge Sectional was one of the best. We can go on and on. I'm not saying never change. I'm just saying that think these things out a little bit more before you're trying to please individuals and understand what impact it's going to have on the larger group or the larger situation in the tournament.
I think the success rule that they put in was all about parochial schools dominating football. I think that
I agree.
The knock on effect is all the other sports are going to have to quote unquote suffer for it. But
yeah,
there was a major uprising up here in the southern or central and northern part of the state about why, you know, as Kurt pointed out, Fort Wayne Lures are Cathedrals won three in a row. Chatards won three in a row. They've won 8 or 9 or 10, and they've dominated the last 20 years, and all these schools, and everybody's, you know, complaining and moaning about it, and they had to do something, so they do this, okay? So it's going to affect other, you know, it's going to affect Evansville Modern Day Lady Wildcats because they've won two states in a row, and, you know, whatever else it affects. But the bottom line is nobody's complained in the basketball area when Carmel has a good chance of winning two states in a row. They can't graduate to any. They can't go up a class. There's no more classes. Now I guess we could kick them out and tell them to play national schedule. But
you got to take a year off.
Public school. Hey, they're a public school. They're a public school. Nobody complains about Indianapolis Pike running the table last year and winning the state, you know, in 4A and. You know, these enrollments, I mean, Carmel refuses to build another high school. They've got 5,000 kids and growing.
Mm-hmm.
Pike and some of these other programs got 3,000-4,000 kids to draw from, to Kurt's point. But it all germinated from football and the belly aching that everybody had about, you know, these parochial schools. And I'll tell you, Cathedral and Chatard, they have 110 players out there, but only 40 of them matter, and probably from that 40, 22 matter.
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing.
There's 50 of them that don't even play. There's 50 of them that don't even play. My point is, build your program up. get things going. If you're Indianapolis Pike, Ben Davis, Mount Vernon of Fortville over here, you got a lot of kids to draw from.
Yes.
Get it going, and they will
I agree.
Because they want to be a part of a winner. People want to be a part of a winner.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, again, the success factor. Okay, Modern Day moves up to 3A in girls basketball or whatever. What happens if Steve Jones bows out two straight years in the sectional? Then they're going to be then people are going to be after him to that he's not getting it done. They have all this adverse effect about this decision, how it's going to impact people, and they never even think about stuff like that. They
yeah,
think
you know,
that.
Don't penalize the kids in the end, and they're penalizing kids. They're penalizing potentially kids that had nothing to do with the 2 years of success. I don't like it. It stinks.
Well,
guys, we're running out of time. To one of our listeners, Caleb, out of Evansville, we will be talking Major League Baseball, college baseball. I promise you, spring training will get in here at some point. So stay. He's a big baseball fan, and we got Kurt Gugsell, and there'll be a lot of baseball being talked about. Guys, it's been great. Love that you can vent. This way you won't go home and throw things. You get it out on the show. We love our listeners. We've had, as I said, the last couple shows, we're headed towards almost 7,000 listeners. Keep spreading the word for us, folks. Keep sharing us on Facebook and Twitter and anywhere else. And feel free to comment, rip us, criticize us. You can text me only at 812-480-9449. Get out and enjoy regional site basketball this weekend. And if you're gearing up for high school, college, or pro baseball, make sure that arm is nice and warm before you do too much. You don't want to hurt it. Right, Kurt?
That's exactly right, Coach. So that's great.
Don, great to have you, Kurt. Joe, you ready to take us home?
I'm ready, guys. As always, you know, there's going to be some great regionals this weekend. If you get a chance, I guarantee you that for the money it costs to get you and your family in, it'll be well worth it. And next week we'll be discussing the Big Ten basketball tournament also will be starting while we are broadcasting next week. But until then, I'm Joe Milligan and saying so long and see you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Bint Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.